patient is going to be decided on the way forward and the funding issue. Chair, I wanted to make an apologies, one from Honorable Mchangi and one from Honorable Obama. Thank you, Chair.
For that one. There we have it, members. There's the proposed agenda in front of us. Can we have a mover and a seconder for amendments? Mm-hmm. Honorable Martin, are you moving?
Adoption of the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Martin is moving. The Honorable Tongwani is seconding. Thank you. Members, we'll go to our first agenda item, that's the consideration of adoption of the draft report on budget for 28 labor. We'll give to the content advisor. We have the copies with us of the report, and the content advisor will take us through it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members, our guests and colleagues. I'm going to take you through the report that was distributed about some time last week. I also want to point out initially some of the minor technical things that we still need to change in the report in order for it to be to fit the criteria that they use for ITC report. So those are, we can give them as staff. I don't think we have to discuss that with the honorable members. So I'm just going to quickly go to page number 4, which is the expenditure estimates for the Department of Labor. So the overall budget allocation for the Department of Labor for 2018-19 amounts to 3.2 billion, and as we know that the work of the department is structured into four programs, which is administration, IES, PES, and labor policy and industrial relations. So the labor policy and industrial relations received the biggest share of the allocation at 1.1 billion, and then it was followed by administration at 917.4 million, and then IES at 598.2 million, and PES at 582.6 million. So, in real terms, the budget for administration decreased by 1.63%, while in nominal terms it increased by 3.78%. IES budget increased by 13.5% in nominal terms, but in real terms it was 7.6%. The public employment services budget increased by 4.5% in nominal terms, but in real terms, it decreased by 0.93%.
Thank you.
are so sorry for this small venue. It's just that there's a lot of committees sitting, and with the renovations in NCOP building, we are really short in terms of venues. So we just, as long as all of us can just find a place to sit, I think we are sorted. We just want to welcome our Deputy Minister and our Miss. You're welcome, DM, to our portfolio committee meeting. And we are busy with the deliberations on all the presentation by the content advisor on the budget report. So you can proceed, Mr. Novo.
Thank you once again, Chairperson. So the overall increase, the overall budget of the department increased by 8.12% in nominal terms, and in real terms it increased by 2.49%. And then I'm going to take you through to page 23, which is which deals with key issues for consideration by Parliament. According to available research, subscribing companies filled 56% of all their vacancies with work seekers registered on the public employment services systems. But the service is hampered by a range of obstacles, including poor infrastructure, which leads to incomplete records being kept, and network failures that make the system slow. This affects its reliability. These barriers affect the extent to which both employers and work seekers rely on the system as a route to the labor market. Yet, according to the APP of the department, the PES program has not set targets to address these infrastructure challenges. Instead, it emphasizes on continuous autonomous numerical targets which do not address the immediate challenges of the work seekers. The PES program targets have not responded to perceptions that the system is mainly for intermediate and low-skilled job seekers. In planning to invite high-skilled work seekers, how does the program targets address this challenge? And then the suggestion is that the Department of Higher Education and Training Institutions have a potential to add value to the ESA system, and as such, the Department of Labor should outline its plans to cooperate with these institutions. And then Parliament has amended various legislations in 2015, such as the Employment Equity Act, the Labor Relations Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, and the New Employment Services Act. As part of the Portfolio Committee of Labor's oversight role, it is important to assess the impact of this amendment and evaluate whether it has any bearing on the challenges prior to their promulgation. In preparation of the budget, the National Treasury or the Minister of Finance prepared a response to the Parliament's budgetary recommendations and review report. Part of the response related to the recommendation by the Portfolio Committee of Labour that National Treasury gives serious attention and ensure that more labour inspectors be appointed by the department. So based on these observations, the recommendations are as follows. The committee is generally satisfied with the plans of the department and its entities. However, the committee recommends that the Minister of Labour considers the following. 1. That the budget of Inspection and Enforcement Services program be increased so that more inspectors are hired and provided with the relevant tools of trade. Secondly, that the budget of the CCMA be reviewed to reflect the increased responsibilities that will come with implementation of the labor law amendments currently being considered by Parliament. Thirdly, that the Department of Labor markets the services provided by the Public Employment Services Program so as to increase the placement rate of job seekers. This might include encouraging other government departments to use the services offered by this program. Fourthly, that the department addresses budget-related issues raised by the Auditor General of South Africa, AGFA. That is all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Novo. There we have it, honourable members, the proposed the draft report in front of us. We've received the report electronically. I hope you had time to go through it. And I think for now we're going to zoom into the recommendation, unless there's any other area that you want us to focus on, that we have amendments that we want to make. Can I get an indication? Honorable Tongwani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. On recommendations, Chair, the last bullet point, that the department addresses the budget-related issues. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, maybe, but I was thinking it must also include the entities, the department's entities, because this is not only affecting the department itself, but the entities affected as well.
Thank you, Honorable Tongwani. Any other input? The Honorable Moteka?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me greet everybody in the house. I want to suggest another recommendation that should be that the action be taken by non-performing entities such as CF, DON, and others. So the management of those entities must account to. Because, for example, in CF, for the past 4 years, there's been no results. But year by year, the money is allocated to them, and we don't see any results, and we can't carry on like that. So that is my recommendation.
There's a proposed recommendation from the Honorable Moteka in terms of consequence management for poor performance. The Honorable Mashile.
Thanks, Chairperson. From my side, I think it's my issue is the numbering on the report so that you are able to identify the sections, and when you quote, then you are able to quote the sections, as well as numbering those recommendations, so that we are able to speak about recommendation number 5 or number 6, to be much more easier. But then on the one side, Chair, I think there was an issue that was raised about investigations of wrongdoing that were taking long to conclude in the department or the entities, investigations that never end. And then possibly we should be recommending speed conclusions of those because whoever is investigated, if he's suspended, then you can't fill the position. If the investigation lasts 3 years, that means that you're running short of one officer for 3 years. But you can't fill the position. So generally, we should call for the investigations to be speedily concluded or resolved on the department as well as the entities. Yeah, I think that is what I just wanted to raise, Chair. And all the time, I think all of us, as we are fighting for unemployment. And then if we are fighting for unemployment, then we must say something about the vacancy rate. About the vacancy rate. And then the vacancy rate then should be kept to the minimum. And then I know that I think they are targeting something like 10%, is it must be below 10%. But there's nothing that stops us to go down to 2-3%, and because in the main objective of actually making sure that people get employed. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. We've had several proposals, Honorable Members, including, I think, one of the main things is the numbering of the headings and the recommendations, so that we can speak directly to the when we talk about a specific heading, we can identify it by the numbering. I think I'm sure that can be rectified by the staff, including the numbering of the recommendations. Then there's proposal for new, first there's the inclusion in terms of the last bullet point on the recommendations. There's a department and its entities addresses budget related issues raised by the AG. I think that one can be agreed to. Can I have an indication from the members? Yes. Honorable Martins.
Chairperson, just in regard to the last bullet point, I think the issues that are pointed out by the Auditor General's office, they go beyond mere budget issues. The functionings of the various entities, and also in regard to the department, there are issues that would be mentioned from year to year. So that can't just be restricted to budget-related issues. So the correct formulation, in my view, would be that the issues raised by the Auditor General's office be addressed in their entirety. Because if you say only budget, you're excluding others.
There's another proposed amendment, and I think we are in agreement on that one. I see heads nodding. Yeah, that we amend that recommendation like that, that the department and its entities address issues raised by the AG of South Africa. Honorable Teko?
Yes, sir, I'm in agreement. Also, it includes the recommendation that was proposed by my Honorable.
Yeah, we're getting there. I'm just taking
no,
it.
No, I'm just saying that we can't second the proposal by Matera because that is when you choose that sentence, then it includes his proposal on that one. So I'm not seconding that based on
So, which means we are in agreement that the issue of consequence management, it was raised in the AG's report, and that's part of the issues that has been, that needs to be dealt with. So it's encompassing everything that pertains to the AG report. And it's not restricting us. Let me just see. Honorable Muteka.
Chairperson, I'm worried if we're going to be too general when addressing specific issues. You know the reason why we failed to make sure these entities are improving in the previous years is this thing of being general. I wanted more especially on these ones of performance and unattendance to fraud cases for 12 months. And those things should be very specific, because come next year we'll be still talking the same thing. Every year we're talking, let there be consequence management. Every day, if you can recall the minutes during this period of this debate, every year we're talking of consequence management to be attended to and all that. It doesn't happen. It never helps us. Hence, I'm recommending specifically management of those entities must account, so that we can see if we can find something. I mean, different results. We can't keep on applying same methods, expecting to see different results.
Thank you, Honourable Moteka. Do we have any input on that proposal? Honourable members, I think what the Honourable Moteka raised is he strongly feels that apart from all the general issues that was raised by the AG, one thing that should be lifted and be emphasized is that consequence management should apply in terms of poor performance of entities. And that's basically what he's saying. Can we?
Yeah, the chairperson, I just wanted to check, you know, it's but is that not what appears on the audit report of the Auditor General in terms of all? Because if that it is in there, and if we call upon the department to attend to issues raised by the Auditor General, and that is included, then there is nothing really that stops us from monitoring all the entities on quarterly basis when they come and an account, and we can even specifically invite a specific entity when the department comes for a quarterly report, and then we say we want that entity to come here and deal with it on that Auditor General's report. Otherwise, then if it is included, then we may find ourselves repeating ourselves left and right. And that's all what I just wanted to check.
That was the intention of that last bullet point, not to raise issues issue by issue has been raised in the audit report. Otherwise, it's going to be a long thing if we're going to speak about procurement, we're going to speak about consequence management, we're going to speak about the fraud cases. So that investigations to be speedily resolved as a proposal by the Honourable Mashile will also form part of that last bullet point. DM?
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning to everybody. Well, I agree with the point made by members that the last bullet point referred to all issues that have been raised by the Auditor General, but a number of these issues are a consequence, in our view, in the ministry, of the absence of consequences for people who fail to perform. I think it doesn't harm anyone. That it helps everybody, including the ministry, for emphasis to be made on the question of consequence management. So if we were to say even something like including action being taken against poor performance by management or something like that, I know that there are many things that have been pointed out by the Auditor General, but in my view, some of them are a result of lack of consequences.
There we have it, Honourable Members. I think, Honourable Moteka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to support the statement by the Deputy Minister, because now, come next year, you will be able to say which action has been taken. Then you know, you can follow up. unlike when it is just general. Thanks very much.
Okay. I think we are in agreement, honorable members, that the content advisor will find a way to include that, or maybe to strengthen that bullet point to include the issue of consequence management for poor performance. You are on it, content advisor. Yeah. Okay. So the other issue that was sharply raised is in terms of the vacancy rate that was not dealt with in terms of the recommendations. The Honorable Mashila made the proposal that we include the recommendation that the vacancy rate to be minimized. Honorable Korai is in agreement. Maybe the content advisor should just assist us in terms of the wording there also. Do we have any other proposals, Honorable Mashile?
Yeah, Chair, is to really capture this one of the vacancy rate is merely just to call for vacant posts to be filled. That's all.
Yeah, we realize in this current environment of a lot of unemployment. So seeing as this committee we want to re-emphasize that whilst there are vacant funded posts, it should be filled in, as soon as possible. It shouldn't be left open for a long period of time. The Honorable Muteka, I think we are in agreement on this point. Is it still on this point, Honorable Muteka? Okay, we can proceed.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think Mr. Mashile is on the right track, but again, we need to say by when, because just to say the vacancy must be filled is open, but must be filled by when, so that we can monitor progress on this thing. Maybe also to ask the department, what is really holding the filling of vacancies that we talk about all the time? What is really holding that thing in this situation of high rate of unemployment, and also because the filling of this post will also help to improve performance in the departments, in all in entities, I mean.
Thank you, Honorable Muteka. The Honorable Korai.
Thank you, Chair. But I'm sure what Mashila has proposed is taking a weight, because when you wanted to put the time frame, you must also remember when we're having a presentation from the department in the past, the issue has been raised and the department responded. Other things that we all understand, that because of the budget constraints and the posts are there, they've never been filled. And I think if you say posts must be filled, we'll be able to come and monitor and be able to ask the questions if necessary to say which post has been filled. The department will be able to tell us which post and the reason behind, because we know exactly that because of the financial constraints of the budget cuts, other posts are not going to be possible to be filled. And we cannot put something that we will force the department to do. It's actually come back to us again, saying we have said you must fill this post, and because of the financial constraints, you didn't do 1, 2, 3, 4, which are very important to the department. So you must not put by when and for, but we must agree that the department will sit down as the bureaucrats and check which posts are very important and essential that you must actually be filled and come and report them to the government. It's known in that the country does not have the demand that it used to be in the past. We are still in a recession in some sort.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Kurai. DM?
Could be I am a closet EFF member. Because I want to agree again with my Honorable Motega, because we I think the portfolio committee has been told of the number of work seekers that are registered in its database and the number of work opportunities that are there, which are very small compared to the number of work seekers. And the Department of Labor has a number of vacancies. I think at least to this portfolio committee, there must be some kind of accounting as how does it happen that for such long periods of time, there are vacancies that are not filled, and yet there are so many people that are unemployed, without necessarily putting a figure, a time frame, but let there be some explanation by ourselves as a department as to why it is that we are unable to fill these vacancies when there are so many people who are looking for work. Can it be that the millions that are in our database don't have the qualifications that we need in the department? I think that kind of explanation has to be given if we continue to come back to this committee with such large numbers of vacancies that have not increased.
Thank you, DM. Honorable Martin.
Chair, I think all of us agree that unemployment is a serious problem in the country. And where there are vacancies, they need to be filled as soon as possible. But the difficulty with saying that all the vacancies should be filled within 6 months or a year, there's logical difficulties. What do I mean by that? We are not advertising the same job across board. There are different gradations of job opportunities, posts that have to be filled, and they are advertised at different times. So you can't stipulate one period to say that by this time all the jobs that are available should be filled. You run into those logical difficulties. But the issue that I would agree with is that there has to be tighter monitoring of when does the department fill those posts that are available. Now and then, if we engage the department, it's for the department to give a report. How far are you in regard to this? 3 months ago, a month ago, this was the position. What's the latest position? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Martins. Maybe we should include that the department should fast track the filling of vacant posts and report to it to the committee on a quarterly basis during the annual report. Is that not summing it up correctly? Are you covered, Honorable Mashile? Honorable Muteka, are you covered?
Yes, Chairperson, that now is covering my concern. Because now on every 3 months we'll be able to say why it is, and then they will explain themselves. This we can't feel because of lack of resources. This we did feel. This then that way there is a proper monitoring of what we are doing. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We are in agreement. There is no other proposed recommendation. Are we in agreement then with that? That's the recommendation. Okay. Then can we then request the committee to adopt the report with the amendments and ask the content advisor and the researcher to go work on the final draft and bring it back to the committee, the final version, before closure of this committee meeting. Are we in agreement on that? Can we then have a mover and a second for the adoption of the report, Honorable Tongwani?
Yes, Chair, I move for the adoption with amendments.
Thank you, Honorable Tongwani. Honorable Moteka, are you seconding?
Yes,
Chairperson, I'm afraid to second if it's not yet finalized, because I want to see it with my own eyes that it is there, then I will second.
Okay. We indicated this is with amendments, Honorable Mashile.
The Chairperson, I second that the court be adopted and the Secretary both and finalize them. And then we can have a final look at it towards the end of the session.
Thank you. That's the proposal and it's agreed to. There's a proposal by the Honorable Muteka. Do we have a second on that one? It doesn't seem so. So we are adopting the report with the amendments, and we'll give time to the researcher and the content advisor to include the amendments and come back with a final version before closure of this committee meeting. So we are then done with this agenda item. The next agenda item is the deliberations on the A list and B list of the labour legislation currently before the committee, and we propose that we start with the Labour Relations Act. Honourable members, we have the documents in front of us.
I just wanted to submit an apology by the Director General of the Department of Labor. He was supposed to be here for the purposes of this particular piece of work, but he's engaged with the work of BRICS, the Employment Working Group that is taking place in Elbridge. So he is the host and the leader of that process. That's why he's not here.
Apology accepted, DG. I think it's an oversight from the Secretary's office, because indeed yesterday we received the apology from the DG. So it's just an omission from the Secretary's side. Sorry for that one. So the apology is accepted from the DG. So in the absence of the DG, we have our DM who's leading the delegation, and we're going to give over to the way that we're going to approach this. Deliberation is we're going to give to the state law advisors and the legal advisors to take us through clause by clause on the amendments that we feel that should be effected, that's not part of the draft bills, and because we will remember that we requested them to go with the department and go and effect the changes that we want to see in the final draft. So they'll take us through, and then maybe if there's areas of concern, the department will come in. So we'll give over to you, state law advisor.
Honourable members, Chairperson, Deputy Minister. I will start by going through the proposed amendments. As Chairperson said, our office met with the department and we effected the changes. There's two documents that we'll be reading from. The first one will be an A list, the proposed A list. This one here, everybody. Those are the amendments we read of, and then this document will speak to the bill as introduced, not the B bill. This one will speak to the bill as introduced, the A list.
I think it's the big document.
The A-list, yes. This will speak to the bill as introduced, and then this amendment shows this, what's affected to the bill that's introduced and not the B bill. And the B bill is the result of this amendment affected to the bill that's introduced.
We'll see, honourable members, that we have two documents on each bill. We have a small document and we have a bigger document.
Mm-hmm.
So the small document refers to the amendment that we wanted to be effective, and the bigger document shows, including the amendments, how the fire product will be like.
And this document will speak to the bill that's introduced and not the B bill. Okay, so it will be the bill that's introduced, the A list, and the B bill. This one looks like this on the inside. Yeah, this is the same document. I think this one has. That's the A list.
Maybe we should look at the bottom of the first page. On the first one, it says B32A and the other B32B.
Yeah.
That's giving us direction. So they just indicate on to which one we are referring to, the A part.
So we'll speak to the B32A of 2017, that's the ABLE. And then the bill is introduced, that's the bill which you had from the previous committee meeting, the bill that was introduced to Parliament that we had the deliberations on. Okay.
So for now, honourable members, we'll remember that we received the draft bills which we worked on during our deliberation phase. So we might have it with us now, but for now we're going to focus on the A and the B bill.
The bill that's introduced and the A list.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks.
Can we then move? We're focusing on the A list now, which speaks to the amendment. Are we on? Are we together?
Yes.
Honourable members. 32A at the bottom of the first page. Honourable Monteka. Okay. So we are the same WhatsApp group now. We can proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Okay. I'll start on the first page. It's written there as proposed by the Portfolio Committee, but after the committee has voted on it and has agreed to, this will change, the cover page will change as agreed to by the Portfolio Committee. Okay. So we'll go to page 2 of the A list. If you look at the first one, proposed amendments. The first proposed amendment is to clause 1 of the bill. In clause 1 of the bill, if you look at page 3 of the bill that's introduced, in line 3 after B, we basically inserted those of you can recall that the public submissions that the department agreed that it should be all between paragraph B and C. But in order to comply with legislative drafting prescripts, we had to include C as a sub-paragraph of paragraph B in order to make it an O. So the first amendment is basically to insert the O after paragraph B, and C will be a sub-paragraph of paragraph B. That's the only amendment to that part. Okay. Is the committee fine with that?
Are we fine with that, honourable members? Can we proceed?
Yes.
Okay. I think you may proceed at any stage when we are not fine, then we'll just interject as the committee members.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. The next one is to clause 3 of the bill. Clause 3 is basically a consequential amendment because of paragraph C being incorporated as a subparagraph B2. So we've amended clause 3 of the bill, and we've deleted the reference to section 32.3C. That's a consequential amendment of the first one. And then the same with regard to item 2 under clause 3 on page 4 in line 27 after section to omit 32.3C and to substitute 32.3B. Okay. The next proposed amendment is in clause 8 of the bill. You want to speak to the in and the after? Department proposed the change from in to after consultation. Department will just brief the committee why quickly.
We, in our discussion, members, we realized that in all the sections in terms of the Labor Relations Act, it's more advisable to have after consultation with the parties, then the minister can do something, instead of in consultation, because that becomes a little bit cumbersome and delay the processes in terms of implementation of the law. That's the motivation for that. That instead of it in, it be after on clause 8.
Do we agree with that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
So that amendment would be on page 6 from line 22, oft amended to omit by the addition of the following subsection and to substitute the following. By the substitution for subsection 8 of the following subsection, it will now read that the minister, after consultation with NEDLAC, may by notice in the Government Gazette publish guidelines to be applied by the registrar in determining whether an applicant is a genuine trade union or a genuine employees organization, and guidelines for the system of voting as contemplated in subsection 9. And then the other subsection would remain the proposed subsection 9 in the bill as introduced. The next amendment, proposed amendment, would be to clause 13 of the bill. On page 7 in line 11, after of to omit its dispute resolution panel and to substitute the person. Okay. The following amendment would be the new clause which would be inserted after clause 14 of the bill. That would be the substitution of section 130 of the Labour Relations Act. The following section is hereby substituted for section 130 of the Principal Act, withdrawal of accreditation. It will now read as follows.
Do we have an interjection, Honourable Mashile?
Chair, I'm still stuck on clause 8. Okay. And I'll possibly just ask the department just to probably just seek some sort of an explanation. In the middle of that paragraph, there's reference to a genuine trade union and genuine workers, employers' organizations. I'm just trying to check the word genuine, because if you check the registrar to check whether it's a trade union or whether it's a genuine trade union, what's the difference? Just the department, just simply to give some explanation.
Can you just clarify that?
Whether you need the word genuine, because if a trade union is defined, and then whether you add genuine in front or you don't, but it must comply with the definition of the trade union. And that's it. Yeah, that's where I was just stuck, Chair.
Honourable members and Chair, the issue of genuine is the current legislation. That's not the new amendment. That's what the current law says. For a union to operate and to be registered, it must be a trade union, a genuine trade union. You've got many people who register bogus organizations and who purport to be trade unions, and the registrar must be able to determine the genuineness of that application, whether they are genuine trade unions. And if you look at the law, then the law set up a criteria. What does the register look at in deciding whether this union is genuine? And the law indicates that they must look at what are the membership, what are the fees that are paid to secretaries. If you see, if all of a sudden you have an organization where the secretary is paid R1 million, it's an indication that this is not a genuine trade union. It might be an organization for gain for that individual. But the law set up a criteria. Therefore, on that section, the only addition is the after and the guideline for the system of voting to assist trade unions. That the minister must publish guidelines that says this is how you are going to do this. But the issue of genuineness is part of the current legislation. That's what it says. And the register need to make sure that when the register an not only a trade union, an employer organization and the trade union, that they are proper, genuine trade unions. They are not bogus, so that people can set up organizations to collect money for themselves. That's the intention of this.
Clarified. It's not part of the new amendment. It's already in the Labor Relations Act. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. We were on the insertion of the new clause, the amendment to section 130, because that never had a prior amendment. It will now read as follows: withdrawal of accreditation. If an accredited council, accredited agency, or a person accredited by the governing body fails to comply to a material extent with the terms of its accreditation, the governing body may withdraw its accreditation after having given reasonable notice of the withdrawal to that council, accredited agency, or accredited person. Basically, the only amendment to this is to provide for the inclusion of accredited persons, because the persons will now have to be accredited. Okay. The next amendment would be to clause 16 of the bill. The next amendment will be to clause 16 of the bill. That should be on page 8, in line 29, of the subsection, to omit 4B and to substitute 3B. On page 8, in line 32, after the word subsection, to omit 4B and to substitute 3B. Those are just the numbering, the correction of the numbering of the subsections. On page 8, in line 34, after 5, to omit no person may and to substitute a person may not. That's just to put it more eloquently. And the following amendment is on page 9, in line 15, after section, to omit 150 capital A 2A and to substitute 150 capital A 3A. On page 9, in line 33, after subsection, to omit 6 and to substitute 7, the 7 in brackets. On page 10, in line 17 of the section, to omit 150 capital C, 4C, and to substitute 150 capital C, 5C. Those are all the amendments for the committee.
Members, there's also one amendment on clause 4. If you look on the bigger bill, clause 4 on line 15, if those that do not have the bill, that's fine. Those that do not have the bill, they can look also on the bigger bill that they have on page 5. If you look at that, the rationale for that, this is about picketing rules. It says that unless the trade union fails to provide the prescribed information. And the issue that we are raising there is that if you prescribe, that means you publish a regulation, you say this is the information that is required. And then the same law says then you people can undermine that regulation. We think that's not the intention, because it gives the minister the power to prescribe the information that is required. And if the minister then publishes a regulation, you can't have the provision in the law again saying that there could be parties who are allowed to undermine that regulation. And we think that it's a mistake, the addition of that, unless the trade union fails to provide the prescribed information. If that's the case, then you don't have to prescribe anything, you don't have to make the regulation. And the intention, remember, there was that with the picketing rules, when a trade unions apply to CCMA and they get a certificate, they get to leave the CCMA with the picketing rules. You cannot have an option where this one leaves with the picketing rules, the other one leaves without the picketing rules. And this, unless create that anomaly. And we propose that it be deleted from the, from that sentence. From unless, that unless. Therefore, if the minister prescribed published rules and regulation, those regulations must be applicable to everybody.
No, Chair, it looks like the amendment we're speaking about is not here on the proposed amendment of the committee. And now it's, I'm just finding it difficult to find where it is. He was talking about four.
Can I assist?
Can you just direct us to
for the committee?
It's line, I mean, it's line 15.
On page 5.
On page 5. Yeah.
From line 12.
From line 12.
On which document?
On the bullet introduced.
Oh, the bill.
Yeah. If you're looking at the B bill, it would be on page 5, from line 15.
From line 15, if you're looking at the B bill, the big bill that you call. Where it says, unless.
So you see it will read section 64, subsection 1, paragraph A. So the wording after that.
Line
15. Yes, okay.
I think you can repeat, Mr. Mkilipi.
What do you say, honorable members? If you read that section, it says the minister has got been given powers to make regulation around that area. Now, that section says, unless the trade union do not supply the information that the regulation that the minister has been given powers to introduce, if they undermine that regulation and not supply the information, then it's fine. Now, the issue that we are raising is that you're giving the minister power to issue a regulation, and then at the same time you're saying there could be parties that should not comply with that regulation. That's the issue that we're raising. You either not give the minister the power to issue regulation in terms of that, and if you do give the minister the power to issue regulation, those regulations must be applicable to everybody. That's the issue that we're raising. And the minister has the power to issue the regulation, therefore that's what we're saying. We're saying that's the omission. What you're going to have, you're going to have a situation where one party could then say, well, the law allows me not to comply with the regulation that has been set up, and the other party comply with that anomaly. And we don't think it's correct to give the power to issue a regulation and then give a citizen the power not to comply with the regulation. It's a clear for me legal issue, a contradiction, that we can't allow the law to go on as it is.
Do I understand that one? Are you in agreement as the state law advisor in the legal section on that?
Thank you. We have considered it and we are in agreement with that. It's quite fine. And we drafted the proposed amendment. If the committee agrees to that, I can read out the proposed amendment to that.
You may proceed. In agreement, members?
Yes.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. That amendment would be to clause 4 of the bill on page 5 from line 12 after the citation of 64.1a to omit unless the trade union fails to provide the prescribed information. Thank you. Those are all the amendments to the bullet introduced.
Thank you very much. Are we in agreement, member? No other amendments? Are we satisfied that all our concerns and all our inputs have been taken into consideration in the revised bill? So we agree on it. The Honourable Mashile.
Yes, Yeah, Chair, it may be very difficult to deal with the cleaning amendment as well as the cross-referencing, which I think at the end of the day must rely on the department and the legal service to ensure that all the cross-referencing have been checked properly and the cleaning amendment to save only for the policy positions that we have dealt with that we are agreeing on.
Thank you. I think we are in agreement with that proposal made by the Honorable Mashile. We don't want any nasty surprises in the media tomorrow. Thank you. I think we are in agreement. We thank you very much for that one. We're going to move to the next bill. We're going over to the BCA, both the A and the B section. B30A and B30B. Are we together, members? Honorable Mashile?
I'm just trying to check with yourself that I think we're dealing with proposed amendments. The AB.
Yes.
And then now we have agreed, and then are they going to show that everything is in so that then we go with the front by clause on this one? Is it going to be done later or not done immediately after the AB? That's what I'm just checking on process wise.
Do you want to say something, Honorable America? Are you covered? Now, what we're going to do now is when we go close by close on the bills, we must make sure what we're going to send them back to effect this amendment into the final bills that we're going to go close by close in. Because we can't go close by close while we have a B bill in front of us that's not affecting the changes that we want to be. So when we receive the final draft, then we're going to go close by close. And that's not going to happen today. Are we in agreement on that one?
Yes.
Thank you. So we move then. We give over to the state law advisors on the BCA. At any given stage, if the parliamentary legal advisors want to get in there, they may feel free. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Bongiwe Lufundo. I'm here for the Basic Conditions of Employment Amendment Bill. I've prepared a list in conjunction with the Parliamentary Law Advisor and the Department, and this is what we've prepared. Starting from Clause 1, on page 2 of the A list, which is B38/2017. In clause 1, the amendment there, which is on page 2 of the introduced bill, after line 12, is to insert the definition, is to rather substitute the definition of commission as it is in the Act. Because the Act currently defines the commission as the Employment Conditions Commission. So the intention as agreed with the committee was to substitute that definition and to insert, to make reference to the National Minimum Wage Commission, which is established in terms of Section 8 of the National Minimum Wage Act. So the purpose of this amendment in Clause 1 is to clarify that aspect. When you refer to the commission in terms of the Act and the bill, then that reference will include the reference to the National Minimum Wage. That will mean the commission as established in terms of that Act. That's the first amendment. The next one is a technical amendment on page 3 in line 6. We omit it all and we're substituting it with AND. It's just a technical amendment there. And same item number 3 on page 3 in lines 7 and 10. we're substituting 2017 with 2018 because the national minimum wage, as referred to in the bill now, the reference has been changed. It's no longer 2017, it's 2018. That's the purpose of that. The next amendment, Chairperson, is on clause 2. Clause 2 of the introduced bill, in line 20. I have to read it in context with the introduced bill in order to understand this amendment. It's on page 3 of the introduced bill in line 20. Yes. And to after 41, to insert section 62A and chapters 3, 4, 5, and 6.
I want
to understand what that clause
about it. Can I just help members? Remember, members, if you look at the current legislation on the application of the PCA, is that it talks that the PCA does not apply to except Section 41, does not apply to Measure and Fishing Act. Those who are in the fishing area, except Section 41. Now, what we're proposing is that there's no reason why the following chapters should not apply. That is chapters on leave. Workers working in the fishery should also be able to go on leave. Therefore, chapters on leave should be included, should not be included there. It should apply, they should be included to go on leave. And chapter 4, it deals with particulars of employment, that these workers must be able to get particulars of their employment from their employer that indicate the wages or the condition of employment that all workers get. And chapter 5 talks to termination of employment. If their employment is terminated, and chapter 5 regulates that, it should apply to them. And then chapter 6, which talks to the provision of children, that the PCA says that you cannot employ children. You should not be able to employ children even in the ships themselves. Therefore, what we're proposing is that the exclusion, that application should stay except for the one in chapter that the colleague is mentioning, including chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5, and chapter 6, because they deal with minimum benefit for workers, irrespective of where you were.
Thank you for that, MP.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you. Now, this formulation doesn't seem to me elegant enough the way it is. When you say this act accepts section 41, section 2A and chapter 3, 4, 5, and 6, not. What is this exception? What is being accepted here? Is it only section 41? Or is this section 41 as well as section 2A and chapter 3, 4, 5, and 6? Yeah.
What the law proposes is that the PCA does not apply to Merchant Shipping Act, except the only part that applies is section 41, is section 62A, and chapter, as we said, 3, which deals with leave. That gives all workers leave, the right to go on leave. And then chapter 4, which deals with particulars of employment. Chapter 5 would deal with termination of employment, with record the procedure to follow termination of employment, and chapter 6 dealing with the provision of children. We say all of those should apply even in shipping machinery, just like chapter section 41. Presently, it's only section 41 that applies, but the whole of the DCA doesn't apply.
Do we understand? Yeah.
I find it everybody has understand formulation.
I think it's to us we had the added advantage because we discussed it in depthly during our deliberations, and there were really also to us areas of misunderstanding, and it was explained time and time over again. So I think we are on par on what is meant by this issue. Do we agree, honourable members? Yeah, we agree on that one. So we just request the Ms. Mkalipi just to take the DM off the record through this area so that it's also on par. Thank you. Can we proceed?
Thank you, Chairperson. The next amendment in clause 2, item number 2, is on page 3 in line 20 to omit does and to substitute does, which is in bold now, and to underline do. And the reason for that is because now it's no longer referring to one section. There's another section also which we shall also refer to there, which is why we're substituting does with do. The next amendment is on page 3 in line 22. In the introduced bill, sectoral determination is in bold, meaning that it is being removed from the Act, and then the reference is made to the National Minimum Wage Act. And there was an agreement reached that the sectoral determination will remain regulated under the basic conditions, so the intention is not to remove it from the Act anymore. Hence that amendment. The amendment now is to substitute that one which is involved in the bill, and then to substitute with a sectoral determination which is not bold, meaning that it's going to remain in the Act as is. That's the purpose of that amendment. And the last one in that clause is on page 3 in line 23 to omit reference to 2017 and the substitute 2018. That's all in that clause, Chairperson.
You may proceed.
The next amendment is in clause 3, on page 3, in line 27. In line 27, to omit after employee, to insert or a worker as defined in section 1 of the National Minimum Wage Act, 2018. The reason for that amendment, Chairperson, as it was agreed, was to make reference now to extend this to the workers as well, because currently the worker is only defined in the National Minimum Wage, but in terms of the basic conditions, the reference is only made to the employee. So it's different now. We're trying to include also the worker to be covered under the daily wage permit. That's the intention for that amendment. So after employee, to insert or a worker is defined, so that they may also be covered under this clause. And the next one is also a similar amendment on page 3 in line 29. After employees, to insert or worker. The next item, Chairperson, is new clauses, which is amendments to section 34, section 59, 52, and 53 and 54. Those are all new clauses. The first one, which is the amendment to section 34 of the Act, this amendment was not part of the introduced version, and it was inserted. If you recall, there was an issue about section 34 of the Act, which talks about the deductions on remuneration. And the issue raised by the members is that the deductions from the employee's remuneration, it must not exceed 1/4 of the employee's remuneration in money. So we've prepared this amendment with the department and the parliamentary law advisor for your consideration to see if we've captured the thought of the committee as they've explained to us. So the amendment to section 34 of the Act it reads as follows: Section 34 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph A of the following paragraph. So section 34 of the Act talks about deductions and other acts concerning remuneration. The amendment in section 34 is in subsection 1. And subsection 1 of the Act reads as follows: an employer may not make any deduction from an employee's remuneration unless, and then there's paragraph A and B. And the amendment that we've made is in paragraph A. Paragraph A says, unless subject to subsection, we're substituting the subsection with subsections, because the reference has been made also to 2A. So it reads, subject to subsections 2 or 2A, the employee in writing agrees to the deduction in respect of a debt specified in the agreement. And B, by the insertion after subsection 2 of the following subsection, there's a proposed new insertion of subsection 2A that reads as follows: the deduction in terms of subsection 1 must not exceed one quarter of the employee's remuneration in money. This is trying to capture what was proposed and agreed by the committee.
Thank you, State Lawyer Isaac, for the department. I mean, legal, parliamentary legal services.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as per the last meeting, our instructions were to insert this into the amendments to the basic conditions. However, and after further consideration of the matter, we're just a little bit concerned about a practical issue, being that the national minimum wage is broader, because the term workers is defined very broadly to also include employees. So the concern is that people who are paying a wage and that are deducting from that wage may not necessarily refer to the national minimum wage at all if they are paying above the national minimum wage, and then may not be aware of this issue of the limitation on the deduction. Therefore, in our view, it would make more sense to import that provision as is into Section 5 of the National Minimum Wage Bill that deals with the calculation of wage, and then do a cross-reference just to ensure that nothing in there makes it open to an interpretation that it's only to benefit employees and not workers, which is a broader definition. So that is our proposal. So the policy would stay the same. It's just the change in the place where it would appear, but the department can indicate if they are in agreement or not.
That's the proposal, department?
We will, I mean, if it covers the rules and we're not going to affect any delays, we have to.
Okay. So, you correct me if I'm wrong. According to me, this whole new clause was not part of the original bill that we've proposed. So in order for this to be effected in the BCA, it needs to go to the House for approval. So what you propose now is that we delete it in the BCA and make provision in the National Minimum Wage Bill. Then there's no need to go to the House. The members, can you elaborate on that? DM, can you come in?
Correction by the experts. I think the other main reason here is that this amendment was presented to Parliament and agreed to it without this process. And because it seeks to amend an act that is already in operation. Now, it would create problems, therefore, as has been indicated, if we were to amend that act without it having gone through the other process that I mentioned. So it's easier, therefore, for us as a parliamentary portfolio committee, rather, to amend the new bill, that is the national minimum wage bill that is before us. So that's why it would be prudent for us to take this particular clause out of this one into the national minimum wage bill. I think that is the thing.
Thank you, DM. I think the main objective also for the members, why they feel strongly on this clause to be included, is to protect that 20 rand. And if you correct me if I'm wrong to say that if we're going to push through on this issue, even if it is agreed upon in the House, then it means this thing hasn't been canvassed through our public participation process. That's opening us for another point of debate. So I'll give to the members to deliberate on this issue, whether we agree on the new proposal made, that we delete it from the BCA and we factor that into the National Minimum Wage Bill as being proposed. Honourable Teko.
Thanks, Chef. I think I'm in agreement with the explanation that is given to us. So we will effect it on the National Minimum Wage Act as applied.
Are we all in agreement on this?
Agreed.
Okay. So, are you still fine with it? So then, it's agreed to, it's going to be deleted from the BCA. You can proceed.
Thanks, Chairperson. The next clause which has been proposed, the amendments to Section 51, 52, 53 and 54. That one is not entirely new because they were covered in the bill. They were covered in the bill, in clause 4 of the bill. If the committee can recall, the intention earlier was to repeat chapters 8 and 9 that deals with sectoral determination. So now the decision was taken not to repeal those chapters anymore, rather chapter 8 that deals with sectoral determination. So what we've done now, as a result of the fact that we're not repealing, we've made amendments, we've drafted amendments to the relevant sections of chapter 8, because chapter 8 was covered in the bill. So that's why we're saying it's not a new thing that is introduced in terms of this. Chapter 8 was already part of the bill, but it was a proposed repeal in the bill. Now we are amending the relevant sections as a result of we're no longer repealing the relevant ones. Like for instance, Chairperson, clause 51, the amendments to clause 51, those provisions, they were already included in the transitional provisions. We've just taken them, it's a cut and paste, and put them now in the main clauses because they are not being repealed anymore.
Agreed, members? Parliamentary legal advisor.
Chair, we just require some clarity from the department because it was removed as the transitional provision and now put into the main content of the bill. The first line under subsection 3 says, if any sectoral determination already prescribed wages. The intention there initially was that it would mean at the date that the bill was promulgated. But now that this is no longer in a transitional provision and we've kept sectoral determination, it may then influence future sectoral determination. So my proposal there was perhaps we need to remove the word already and rather say those that are enforced at the time of promulgation. But the department can just clarify this issue on the intention of the sectoral determination, whether there will be SDs with possibly higher wages than the national minimum wage for particular sectors. Because if that is the case,
then we need to be clear here, because the rest of the clause talks about incremental increase in accordance with the national minimum wage being increased every year. So that means the SD would have to be Z together with what the national minimum wage percentage is. And the easy way to clarify it is to say the two are dealt with separately. There's a national minimum wage. Nobody may go below that threshold, which is already there. But if there's a sectoral determination that's higher, that sectoral determination stands on its own. So the department just needs to clarify that, because if, as I'm explaining it, if that is the intention, then that word already would need to be replaced to say ones that are enforced at the date of promulgation. Because otherwise already could be deemed to then be any sectoral determination in the future even. I don't know if it's making sense, so it's very technical, but Mr. Kalipi will respond.
If you remember, this is one of the areas that we've agreed in our discussion, technical discussion, that the sector definition that we're talking about here are sector definitions that are in place when the law comes into play, as the parliamentary legal officer is recommending. Therefore, we need to factor that in there. That's what we're talking about. But the issue of the wages in the sector definition that are in place, we've discussed this, the increase in those wages that are above the minimum wage to still increase proportionally as the minimum wage is increased. That will make it possible that we don't have, unless it's necessary, we don't have to publish sector designation every year indicating those sectors. If there's already sector designation existing when the Act comes into place, those sector designation will adjust as the minimum wage adjust. But the proposal that you are making, we agreed on that proposal, is just an omission that we do not correct when the process and the printing was done on that. It's got to reflect, as the colleague is indicating, that instead of saying the wage act, it should say at the promulgation of this act. We propose that the members accept that and we set that for the written property in that section.
Are we clear on that one, members? You know, it's highly technical and easy. But I think the main intention is to make sure, and I think that the whole confusion comes in when we initially thought that there won't be any sectoral determination. Now everything has to be adjusted accordingly, and we have to make sure that we factor in everything that's not going to make things contradictory and open for litigation. But I think in the main is that what this is actually referring to is to make sure that the current sectoral determinations that probably above the national minimum wage level won't be stagnant. It will be increased on an annual basis as well.
So just to explain it, Chair, again, if you look on the, on the B38, the one we received yesterday, it already in fact that amendment that it already talks about. If any sector determination at the date of implementation of the National Minimum Wage Act 2018 at the start, it already affected that was as the key. If you look on 38, the one that we received, it's already built in that. And if you look at page 3 of that, page 3 of subsection 5.3, it's already incorporated in the BB.
Do we agree, Honourable Member? Honourable Michele?
No, Chair, it's just some technicalities, maybe because one is not yet filled with the business of this committee. But the sectoral determination, are they not determined by the minister? And then now,
And then now what I'm reading here, or I'm understanding, is that we are now saying that setting the national minimum wage will automatically changes the wages in the sectoral determinations, almost without even the intervention of the minister. That if it is set, and those wages above then will automatically be changed. But whereas is that the power to do that is the minister's power. That's my little technicality that I'm getting. Why should it be automatic? And then why not the minister have the power to consider the new minimum wage and then to actually adjust those? Why does it have to be automatic? And because if it becomes automatic, then it actually rolls the powers of the minister in terms of the third. Why don't we call the minister then to always consider the level of the national minimum wage as set when making adjustments or determining whatever? It's just a technical issue that I'm just trying to raise.
It seems as if we talk to two separate issues here, if I understand you correctly. On the top of page 4, it's referring to associated benefits based on those wages must be increased proportionally to any adjustment of the national minimum wage in terms of the National Minimum Wage Act.
Chair, I was still on page 3, on section 51. That is number 5. I think that's more or less where we're talking about. Because it says that if any central determination already prescribes wages that are higher than the national minimum wage, the wages in that sectoral determination and the remuneration and associated benefits based on those wages must be increased proportionally to any adjustment of the national minimum wage in terms of the national minimum wage.
Can you just come in?
So that's what I'm just saying, that it looks like there is an automatic thing that happens here. But in the area where the minister has the power to determine the central wages, and then it creates two centers of power to adjust the central.
Can we get a clarification?
Yes, that's what I'm just doing.
I think the issue that we want to deal with here is that you've got central determination presently that regulate wages, and those wages ranges from 0 to 30 rands an hour, something like that. I'm just making an example, it's not the actual rate. Now, when the national minimum wage comes into play, let's say it comes in, first of October, something like that, you've got the national minimum wage. Then, next year, the national minimum wage, let's assume that is reviewed.
Yeah.
And then the commission proposes 10% increase on the national minimum wage. You've got a danger that by that time, not all the national minimum wage, the minister wouldn't have time. Remember, the minister must still be advised by the same commission. If the commission is busy in the first 6 months investigating the effects of the minimum wage and proposing a review of the minimum wage, then they must go out and investigate on each one sector designation and propose what the increase on each on sector designation, in order when the minister introduces the reviewed level of the sector designation, those workers that are earning above the minimum wage also get an increase. Now, what was agreed at NEDLAC, if you remember, the NEDLAC agreement was that the wages in sector designation must be increased proportionally to the national minimum wage, but that was limited to a period of 3 years. What we've done in the discussion, because of the sector designation are going to remain, is that then you take out the limitation of 3 years,
you said when the minimum wage is adjusted, the wages in the sector designation that above the initial minimum wage will be also adjusted. This technically, the minister, before the minister then make any sector designation review, any of these sector designation, the minister then will have to decide and say, do I review wages? If the minister wants to review wages upwards, the minister can still do it on top of the increase. The minister might say, no, I'm not going to deal with wages, I'm going to deal with conditions of employment in this sector designation. And then I'm going to change that and public sector designation. It's a cleaner way of ensuring that you don't have a situation where workers who are earning above the minimum wage, mm-hmm. when the national minimum wage is increasing, there's a risk that their wages would not be increased. And that's what this is saying. Therefore, it does not say that the minister cannot introduce new sector designation or amend the sector definition. It says that does not happen and the national minimum wage is increased by a factor of a percentage. That is applicable to all sector of definition that is that about wages that are above the minimum wage. It protects workers to ensure that they will get an increase when the national minimum wage goes up, irrespective of whether the sector definition has been changed or not.
I think let's take
Honorable
Muteka, maybe
we can
come
in
after
that. Thank you, Chairperson. This amendment, doesn't it interfere with annual increases? Because if the annual increase of wages is there, and there's no way that the minimum wage can catch up with the wages that are already above it. But if the whole exercise will now depend on the minister for the increment of wages, then it's where you are correct. And the other thing, I just want to highlight that I'm happy that it is stated specifically there that increased proportional. Because if the increase was not included, adjustment alone was going to give an employer, those kind of employers, a chance to adjust downward. But the word increase, it shows it will never come downward. But my question is, what about the annual increases that the workers are getting? Because if they are still there, obvious, this thing will never catch up with. If you are at 30 rand and then it's at 20 rand, there is no way that it will catch up with you because it will move. But just clear me up.
I think we still want to come in.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Members. If the concern there is the Honourable Member in relationship to the interference of the Minister in terms of the poorer perhaps we need to address that. In terms of the national minimum wage for that you have in front of you, when it talks to the functions of the Commission, it still gives the functions of setting the poor determination to the Minister. So it still remains the Minister's prerogative to make sectoral determinations and adjust sectoral determinations. What this does is provide a mechanism for the minister in considering a sectoral determination, that the mechanism says that wages and conditions that are linked to the wages should be adjusted proportionately to the national minimum wage. So it talks about that process of adjustment, but it also provides guidance in relationship to where the minister may apply a fine in relationship to wages and conditions that are
linked to the support conditions. Mr. Chair, I wanted to add on this issue. One of the members, you must understand that in this country there's no law that requires guaranteed annual increase. Annual increases are as a result of company policy or of collective bargaining. Now, the people that we're talking about are not likely to have collective bargaining representation. Now, this process ACA guarantees that they will have annual increases when the national minimum is there. If the employer on top of that gives an annual increase, that's good for them.
Thank you.
we can't leave on the premises that they will be getting an annual increase.
I think it's much clearer now, Tim.
And also, Chairperson, as I read this part, it does say that the wages in that sectoral determination and the remuneration and associated benefits based on those wages must be increased, which means then that if a worker is entitled to annual increases, those are benefits that are associated with the wage reduction, and therefore they have to increase proportionally.
I think we are covered in terms of that one. Can we proceed then?
The next amendment, Chairperson, is clause 6, which is the amendment of section 52 of the Act. Section 52 of the Act deals with investigation. The purpose of the amendment is to substitute the DG with the Commission, and then also to substitute the Minister with the Commission. I'm going to read paragraph A, by the substitution for subsection 1 of the following subsection. Subsection 1, before making a sectoral determination, the Minister must direct the DG, which is in bold, because the intention is to remove it from the Act, reference to the DG. So the Minister must direct the Commission to investigate conditions of employment in the sector and area concerned. The next one is by the substitution in sub 2 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. The Minister must, which is in bold, and underline, the Commission must, on its own accord or on the direction of the Minister, as contemplated in subsection 1, determine the terms of reference for the investigation, which must include dash. The next amendment is on paragraph C, is a substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection. Subsection 3, the Minister in bold and Commission underlined must publish a notice in the Gazette setting out the terms of reference of the investigation and inviting written representations by members of the public. And paragraph D, by the substitution in subsection 4, for paragraph A of the following paragraph, direct the DG in bold, Commission underlined, to conduct an investigation of. I'm not sure if that is clear enough, in which case Mr. Mkalipi can explain the purpose of those amendments. But as I've indicated, it's just to substitute the DG with the Commission. As a result now, because the Commission is established in the national minimum wage, is the one who's going to deal with this, working with the Minister.
We agree on that.
Thanks, Chairperson. The next amendment is clause 7, amendment of section 53. Section 53 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 1 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. It has the same related amendment with substituting the DG with the Commission throughout this amendment. That's the purpose, so I'm going to read. For the purposes of conducting an investigation in terms of section 52.1, the DG, which is in brackets, the Commission may, and in paragraph B, by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. Subsection 2 reads, a person may not refuse to answer any relevant question by the DG, which is in bold, by the Commission that he or she is legally obliged to answer. That's the only amendment to clause 52 of the Act. The next one, which is the last amendment, is on amendment of section 54 of the Act. Section 54 of the Act deals with preparation of report. The amendment is in subsections 1 and 2 of the Act, and it reads as follows. Section 54 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsections 1 and 2 of the following subsections respectively. Subsection 1 reads, on completion of an investigation and after considering any representations made by members of the public, the Director General, which is in bold, Commission underlined, must prepare a report. And in sub 2, a copy of the report must be submitted to the commission for it, that is in bold, and in underline, it must be submitted to the minister for consideration. So that's the purpose of those amendments, Chair President.
Honorable
Mashile.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to raise the issue that I think we try to characterize the commission as an internal structure of the department rather than a typical Chapter 9 institution. Now, if that is the case, and then it looks like our amendment here, especially the last one, where the report is from the commission to the minister directly, it actually excludes the director general as the accounting officer of the department. I just want to ask just simply to talk to that, especially those that are legally qualified. Do we really need to create a process which completely excludes the DG from commission to the minister? And what would then be the role of the director general as an accounting officer of the department overseeing even this commission? So I think the rest of the other ones on the investigations and the rest are understandable. But when it comes now to the reporting, that still happens to the exclusion of the DG, who's supposed to be accounting on the, even on the work of the commission. I think those that understand these things better than may just attempt to speak to them.
Can you respond to the
Remember the creation of the commission. The law creates a commission that must act independently. Remember, the commission makes a recommendation. And that's what the law presently says, even now, that the Employment Commission makes recommendation to the minister. Now, in going to the minister, those recommendations go to the AG, the DG, sign off. They can't go directly, that's the chain. But it still remains the recommendation of the commission. If the DG does not agree with the decision of the commission, the DG can write his report, whatever it says, but it cannot change the report of the commission. This is what the commission says. This is what the commission is recommending. It does not stop the DG doing anything in terms of his or her responsibility to account to the department and to the minister on whatever anybody is doing. But the DG cannot, in whatever way, change the decision of the expert. Remember, these people are expected to investigate, to research, and on the basis of the research and says, this is what we're recommending. Anybody that disagrees, members of the public might disagree with that recommendation, but they can't change the recommendation. They can, in their comments that they make, say we disagree with the recommendation of the commission. This is how we see it. The DG can do that, and anybody else can do that, but it will remain in terms of what was agreed on, a decision of the commission and the recommendation of the commission that goes to the minister. And that's how it operates, and it is now with the ECC. It goes to the minister. But doesn't necessarily mean that the DG cannot play any role in terms of that.
Chairperson, I think the chief opposite me, I think, is bringing some other things that I'm not speaking to. I'm not speaking on issues of changing the report or amending the report. I'm just talking about the system of reporting. What I'm just trying to raise that we just need to talk to and be clear about it is that is the DG is the accounting officer of the department. that this committee is not going to be state independent, but it's an internal committee of the department. It's not a chapter 9 institution that sits out. And now what I'm saying is that what I'm seeing here, it says the commission must prepare a report, and then a copy must go to the ministry. There's nothing that talks to submitting the report to the department. There's nothing that says so. So that is what I'm just simply saying, is that you have an accounting officer for this operation, and then you're seeing a report being prepared, fine, and then the department, then it is the ministry that receives the report on. So that's what I'm just simply raising, that we just simply be aware of the situation that is being created. Remember that ministers come in and just disappear. It is only the department and the DG and all the senior officials that keeps the memory and everything that happens in the department. And then, but when you look at this, you're moving from commission straight to minister. There's no element that says the DG and whatever the relevant DPG director general then receives any copy or whatever, or reporting into the department. That's all I'm just trying to raise. I'm not raising issues of amending the report or whatever, just simply the reporting system or the reporting mechanism in terms of accountability as well. That's all what I was just raising. But we may proceed if we are clear, but I thought that the lawyers then should be speaking to that and maybe just allaying the fears on this reporting system. Thanks.
Just to clarify something here, currently the Act provides for the DG to conduct the investigation. The Minister directs the DG to conduct that investigation. And then in Section 53, that's the conduct of investigation, how is it going to be conducted, and it's still the DG who's doing that. And then you go to the preparation of the report, it's still the report that goes with the same investigation that was conducted by the DG. And then when the DG has finalized the investigation, then it's going to report to the minister. So what is the amendment is doing now is changing that. The commission is the one who's going to do the investigation, and then also when they finish with that investigation, they report to the minister. But the clarity that I wanted to give Chairperson, it's not the kind of reporting that you would see in these chapter 9 institutions when you report on the activities of whatever body. Is it a reporting on a function that has been given to the commission to conduct the investigations on sectoral determinations? Maybe we may separate from the general reporting that the honorable member is referring to.
Are you covered, Honorable Mashile?
No, Chair, it's to be much more honest, and on the last issue, when it comes to the report that goes out, I would have expected that the report at the DG office or the department, not even talking about the DG, just to say the department has received the report as well. It was the custodian of all the documentation in the first place. Let alone is that whether it's a copy goes to the minister, but the department must receive a report that is produced by one of its own entities, if it is operating on an independent or autonomous basis. That is what I would have preferred. And then, but let's proceed not to put stumbling blocks on this particular one. Because originally, yes, it was the DG was producing this and mandating other people, whether it's a commission to do that and receive the report, pass it to the minister. But now it's all the amendments that we have just done before this one. We have now shifted all that responsibility of investigation and reporting from the DG to the commission. Then which is fine because it's a relevant structure. But then when the final report comes out, then there must be something that guarantees the department to receive a code of conduct as well. And then, because otherwise, remember that you have the department separate in entities. Then you've got the ministry, which is also separate. It is not that they work together, but you've got the ministry or the department. And to ensure that you see the records of the department are with the department as well. I would have loved to see that, but I think we may look at it sometimes in future. Let's move forward.
Yes. Please, we're circling now around the same issue. It's very
yes.
time consuming now.
Yes.
Can we move?
Mm.
Thanks, Chester. Sorry, GM.
We move on what you said.
As it is, the thing is.
I would think, Chair, if I may. I thought, first of all, maybe wrong. These amendments that we're dealing with were proposed by the committee itself. Therefore, answers should come from the committee. Yes, what role is the committee giving, if any, to the Director General in the work of the commission? Because this is not the first time a commission has been established, and it has to account through the DG when it comes through. So was there some rational decision that emanated from discussions here for this change to be effected, which seems to take the DG completely out of the picture? I would have thought maybe the committee itself or the officials were involved in all of this discussion would know some answers, because this is completely illogical and it's the manner in which government operates. Just leave it like that, sir. I think we were putting ourselves in trouble, but we're moving. Only to find that later on we might come into another clause that is referring to one might we have not concluded.
For me, I wanted just to indicate two things to the members. First is that this is not the first definition that I've got a pension. Employment Equity Act, Record Commission, Employment Equity Commission. That commission submitted a report to the minister. That's what the act, the current act said. It investigates compliance with the Employment Equity Act and submit an annual report, and that annual report goes to the minister. The way it goes, reaches the minister. That report that is submitted by the commission to the secretary. The secretary to do a submission is not in the law. It goes to the DG, from the DG goes to the deputy minister, from the deputy minister to the minister. And that's the route it goes. The same will apply in this. And I'm trying to say to the commissioners, to the members of parliament, that this is not the first legislation that you passed that gives the right of the commission to report on the implementation of the legislation to the minister. And a good example to that is the Employment Equity Commission that have got a responsibility to report on the performance of the sector in terms of transformation. That report goes to the minister. No way in that act it goes to the DG and to the minister. Go to the minister. But the operational, in terms of the department, nothing goes to the minister without having taken that report. Even that report, that's how it reaches the minister. Therefore, the DG will have sight of that report. The deputy minister will have sight of that report. Although the law doesn't say it must go to the deputy minister, it goes through the deputy minister. But it still remains the report of the commission. And I'm giving this explanation to alleviate any fears of the members that the DG is not going to see the report. Because if you look on the practice in terms of what the Employment Equity Act and the commission does, it does exactly that. And then the deputy minister will attest to that, that he has seen all reports that go to the minister go through the office of the minister from the DG, and that's how the operation is. And if you want to give, remember in the debate and in parliament, the issue of the independent operation of the commission was a big issue, that the commission must be seen to be operating independently. although we're not setting up a chapter 9 or an entity, it's within the department. Within the department, in terms of its own operation, it must operate independently, it must report, make recommendations to the minister. The minister must consider those recommendations. Obviously, the minister could advise us. The minister must, if the minister is not sure about anything, can ask the commission, can ask the DG, can ask all the DGs that are there. This is what the commission is advising me. What's your take on this? Have you seen this issue? And that's how presently it operates.
So Honourable Muteka and then the Honourable Teko.
Chairperson, you know, I just want to find out, what are we going to lose if the DG is included there? And I know we have passed this thing of people saying you can't just try to put everything there. If we say in the minister, it means it's also included in all the those things. But some things need to be stated going forward. You know, another concern, Chairperson, is this thing of, even if we see we are stuck here, we can't agree, then we bring a pressure of time. Because of time, let us just go. We did it many times during this process. So now it is very painful, because now we're going to just pass for the sake of time. And then we have heard that the honourable member says we'll see it later on. There's no later on. Once we are done with this, what we're doing today is something else tomorrow. Then we move on. Then what does it mean? It means this part of amendment have passed the committee without any approval or something like that. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honourable Muteka. The Honourable Teko.
Can we get an advice before we conclude on this matter, so that we're informed the legality of the DG and the Commission itself? Because I think there are rules and the Act, so she can advise us better so that we can take a decision on the matter and inform us. If we don't have an answer today, we can recommend that they go and look at it and come with an answer.
I think the legal advisor is ready to respond, then we give over to the Honourable Korai.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in the original version of the legislation, what would happen is that the minister would be instructed, the DG at least, would be instructed by the minister to investigate and advise on the issue of a sectoral determination. And the minister then, the DG then had the power to conduct an actual investigation, to ask for, to do a public participation process, to ask for people to come and give information before the DG. The DG then submitted that information and that recommendation to the minister, and the minister in turn sent it to the Employment Commission for them to make the for them then to give advice based on that information that's received. There's a fundamental difference here now, because what's being proposed now is that power originally is given to the commission, which means the commission that consists of experts as well as other independent persons appointed in consultation with NEDLAC, so it's a more representative body, now has those same powers to conduct an investigation, and one would assume to make a more informed recommendation because of the fact that you've got different elements coming to the table. Nothing prevents the minister from still requesting the DG to make a recommendation or to comment on the proposal that is received from the commission, because ultimately the decision to make the determination rests with the minister, because the commission is merely an advisory body. So the question is, where does the function better sit? Does it better sit with one individual being the DG, and we ask the DG to conduct it as it has been done in the past, or if the committee would prefer that it's the work of the commission as part and parcel
of their inquiries into the national minimum wage, because this would all tie in. So it is a policy issue for the committee to decide on, June.
I think it's clear, members. There, can we have Mr. Sikhu?
Thank you, Chair. But there was also a structural reason to the DG being requested to do the investigation. The structural reason is that the secretariat for the commission resides within the department. In the instance of the National Minimum Wage Commission, the secretariat will still reside within the department. And perhaps the question that the honourable member is asking in relationship to where the power lies is a valid question, because in terms of its structural nature, the commission is not going to be a commission that sits outside of the department's own secretariat. While there will be a secretariat that has been developed and designed for the commission, it still sits within the department. I think that is the the proposal that one needs to look at, re-look at this, it makes valid sense here.
Thank you, Mr. Ziegfeld. Honorable Kurai.
Chair, thank you. After this discussion, and seeing that the department is not involved, I have a proposal to say a copy of the report must be submitted to the DG and the Minister for consideration, if we can put that. It will cover that the DG has the copy, because I understand from the department that it's not in the act, but it usually happens that after any commissioner's report, then the DG still get a copy, the deputy minister copy, and the minister. But to cover that, according to the way Mr. Masile wanted, I think if you can put the end the DG there, that's my proposal. Thanks.
Do we perhaps have a proposed wording to address the concern?
Chair, I don't have a proposed wording, but if you are agreed in principle that indeed the DG must be involved and that therefore must appear in the theater, then let's agree on that and allow the chapter to formulate the appropriate
Yeah, Chair, I think, but my comment must be understood correctly, because I think the legal person there, I think, also conflated the thing. My issue is the commission is responsible to do whatever it has to do. But then, but the commission itself is part of the department. And therefore, the department should know what it is doing. Not necessarily to consider the report and make determinations. The minister will do that. But for the DG, as an accounting officer of the department, to be able to account on the work of that commission as well. That's all what I'm just simply saying, is that the reporting should make sure that the DG is aware of the report produced that has been sent to the minister. So that when you expect the DG to account, he must be able to account and tell people that the report has been produced on the particular thing the minister has received. But what I'm hearing now from that candidate is now speaking about the gentleman's agreement. And gentlemen's agreement, they only work when relations are good. But when relations start straining, somebody's not going to know anything and then everything will go behind all these sorts of things. So that's why I was not saying that the DG must consider the report. No. But for information, for record purposes, then the accounting officer needs to be aware of what is happening within his department. And therefore, this must actually make sure that the department receives that report.
even though that it is not going to make a determination, the determination is expected to be made by the meaning. That's the only thing that I was just speaking to on the accounting powers and then of the DG. That's all what I was just raising.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. Honorable Muteka, you are noted.
Chairperson, I think we've reached an agreement now, because I'm supporting what Honorable Korai have said, and also what the Deputy Minister have said. The insertion of the best weighting will come from the expert. We may not know exactly what can we say, but it will be inserted. So we cannot reject it for the sake of it doesn't have the good weighting as we did before. Thanks very much.
Parliamentary legal.
Chair, two things. I think a simple amendment to section 54 to cover that concern is subsection 2, which says a copy of the report must be submitted to the minister. We can now say a copy of the report must be submitted to the DG for consideration. Then build in a new subsection 3 that says the DG, after considering the report, must forward the report to the minister with the DG's comments on the report. That's the first thing. On the issues that Honourable Mashile is raising about the secretariat and the functioning and the accountability, that's covered in the National Minimum Wage Bill. In section 13, it says, subject to the laws governing the public service, the minister must provide the commission with a secretariat and the necessary resources. The laws governing public service would be clear that they are employees of the department and they are accountable to the DG, and all procurement or anything that's done, the DG would then sign off on as accounting officer. So I think both the issues are then resolved.
Mr. Mkulipi, do you agree with that?
We wanted to put a counter proposal. The issue of the principle, there's no issue. There's an agreement that on principle that the DG should have sides of the document. But we think that there should be only one person that is considering the report, and that's the minister, nobody else. And the minister then reports to cabinet and do that. And you don't want then a dispute, as what often says, that if you work on the basis that the minister and the DG will agree every time, what happens when the DG has considered it, differs for whatever reason to the minister, and then you've got two reports in a position where, and what we want to propose is that simple amendment that says end after the end of consideration for the minister and to the DG for information. And then it is covered that.
You in agreement, legal?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All of us are in agreement. Yes. Thank you. So that one is resolved then. Can we then move forward?
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 4. The amendment to clause 4 is to omit chapters 8N and to substitute chapter. If you look at the heading of chapter of clause 4 in the bill, it says repeal of chapters 8 and 9, but now it's no longer chapter 8, it's only chapter 9 which is being repealed. The next item, item number 2, is on page 3 in line 32. To omit chapters 8 and 9 of the Principal Act are hereby repealed, and to substitute chapter 9 of the Principal Act is hereby repealed. That's what we have there. The next clause, Chairperson, is a textile amendment, which is on page 3 in line 38. To omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. Same thing with clause 6. Page 3 in line 44, to omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. Next one is clause 8. In clause 8, the amendment there, which is in lines 24 and 28, is to omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. Next amendment, Chairperson, is on page 4 in line 27. To omit, apply to, and to substitute in bold now, apply to underline the request, but the intention is they don't have to apply to, but they must request. If you read it in context with the bill, is that if the employer fails to comply with the return undertaking given to by the employer in terms of this section, the DG may request CCMA to make the undertaking. That's the purpose of that amendment. Next one in clause 9 is the technical amendment substitute 2017 with 2018. In clause 10, page 5, in line 7, to omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. Same with second one is on page 5 in line 14, to omit all. This one is a technical amendment. The next item is on page 5 in line 17. To omit all, which is in bold, semicolon all, which is in bold, and to substitute with semicolon and all, which is not bold, because it's being kept now in the Act. This next one, Chairperson, which is on page 5 from line 18, the entire paragraph D, which is in bold in the bill, the intention at the time was to omit that from the Principal Act, but now it's been agreed. Actually, this is a proposal, Chairperson, from the department. Currently in the bill, paragraph D is all in bold, and that means that it's being deleted from the Principal Act. But now it's being substituted with a paragraph D, which is not in bold, but amended rather. And the intention there is to substitute 12 months with 36 months. That's what is being proposed. Maybe the department can explain.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. The explanation to this is that it was a mistake to delete that section. That was not the intention of the amendment. And that was not the agreement at NEDLAC. What we agreed at NEDLAC, if you look at the section as it stands now in the law, it's a limitation. It says an inspector cannot issue a compliance order if the case is 12 months old. For example, if you have not been paying your wages and you don't go to an inspector within the 12 months, then the inspector can't issue claim your wages for 24 months, for example. That's what the current law says. Now, what was agreed at NEDLAC was that we need to change the 12 months to 36 months, that is 3 years. Therefore, that what it would mean that is that an inspector now can enforce any non-compliance and claim wages of workers up to 3 years. And the reason it's limited to 3 years is that in terms of the requirement of the DCA to keep records, if you look on section that's what would show in the section of the section 7 of the current Act. Looking about keeping of records. The law requires employers to keep records for 3 years, 36 months. Therefore, if you leave it open, the employer will simply say, well, the law requires me to keep records for 36 months. I don't have those records. Now, if the law requires the employer to keep 36 months for 36 months, there's no reason that an inspector should not enforce it for 36 months. And that's what we're doing. And that was an agreement that we agreed at the NEDLAC. And it's part of the NEDLAC agreement. And that's the proposal that we're making to effect that instead of deleting the whole section of the limitation.
Legal, do you agree with that?
Yes, Chair, we supported this also in line with the common law, which gives you a 3-year period for prescription of a claim, because in essence it's a claim for underpaid salary. So this will give employees a longer opportunity in which to raise the issue. So we support it.
Are we in agreement, members? Mm-hmm. Thank you. We can move. Thank you, Chairperson. The next one is clause 11. Clause 11 of the bill. It's on page 5 in line 28. To omit arbitration
award and to substitute an arbitration award.
Let me check the act. It's on page 5, in line 28. An order may be made in an arbitration award. Oh, yes. Chairperson, the intention here, currently the act, it only says in the act, that section 73, it reads, order may be made, order of labor court. It ends there. The amendment which was made in the introduced version was to omit reference to the labor court, and now the order may only be made an arbitration award. So that should be underlined to show that it's a new insertion. So what we're having in this, in terms of this amendment, is to clarify that. Because if you leave it unamended, then it won't clarify the fact that it's a new thing that is being inserted. Because if it's unamended, if it's not underlined, then that will mean that it's already in the act, it's already provided for in the act. So by putting an underline, you're trying to show that it's the new intention, it was not part of the principal act. So that's what is happening there in that amendment. You're omitting it, the one which is not underlined, and then you substitute the arbitration award, which is underlined. And then it's going to be reflected clearly in the PPL. Next one, chairperson, is on page 5 from line 34. To omit, which is the entire subsection 2 that says, that reads as follows, after considering any representations made to it, the Labour Court, the CMA underlined, may issue an order, which is in bold, may issue an arbitration award in terms of subsection 1 requiring A, the employer to comply with the provisions of this act, which is in bold now. So the employer may to comply with the provision of an employment law, paragraph B, subject to section 70D in bold, and then 76A, which is underlined, the payment of any amount owing to an employee, or the payment of a fine calculated in terms of schedule 2 to this act, or paragraph D, the payment of the amount that the employer is required to pay in terms of the uninsurance contributions act, including interest and penalties calculated in terms of section 12 and 13 of that act, and to substitute the following. The intention, chairperson, is to substitute the entire subsection 2 as it appears in the bill in the introduced version, and to substitute with a new subsection 2 that reads as follows. The CCMA may issue an arbitration award in terms of subsection 1 requiring the employer to comply with the compliance order if it is satisfied that A, the compliance order was served on the employer, and B, the employer has not referred a dispute in terms of subsection 59.5. That's the amendment there, chapter. If Mr. McCalby want to come in and to explain the purpose of that.
If I might ask members to explain what the intention here is, that the inspector goes to the factory, find out that the employer has not complied with the minimum wage. The inspector can do two things, can try and convince the employer that you have not complied, sign a settlement agreement that says, I agree, I have not complied, and this is what I'm going to do to comply. That's an undertaking, make an undertaking. Now, if the employer has not complied with that undertaking within 14 days, because that's what the undertaking says, then the CCMA will issue an order immediately, an arbitration award. There's no hearing. Remember, an undertaking is an agreement where the employer agrees that I did not comply. Now, if you don't comply with your own agreement, there won't be a hearing. The CCMA issues an award that says you have not complied. Then the amendment that we are making, the one that say the new one, let us say then the company now refused to do an undertaking to make a settlement agreement, and the inspector issues the compliance order, and the employer does not indicate to the CCMA that they object to the compliance order. The employer sits and does nothing. After 14 days, the CCMA automatically issues an arbitration award because the employer has not indicated that they comply. The employer has not indicated that they are objecting to the award. Then the CCMA issues. And that section, as we would read it, says unless the employer has referred the dispute in terms of section 55 part, if the employer then has indicated that I object to this compliance order for whatever reason, then the CCMA set up a process. It's only then that they set up a process. That's what this section is intended to. If members will remember, the director of the CCMA was in the commission and they made input on what changes that we needed to do in order to make sure that we are able to implement this. And those are the amendments that were accepted and were asked in terms of the last meeting to go and affect them. And that's what this is affecting.
Legal, do you agree with that one? Okay. Honorable America.
Thank you, Lord Chair. Just the question is that...
can you just phone the Honorable America with a mic, please?
Apologies, Madam Chair. Mr. Mukhavipi, if I understand it correctly, is that once the initial arbitration award is sort of issued by the CCMA, then one would understand it to be a default award. Because there's no objection that had been lodged. Should the objection be lodged, would it then presuppose that a hearing will take place and only then an arbitration award will be issued? And will that particular process be contained in the amended CCMA rules? Just clarify that, please. Thank you.
Yes, honourable members, that the CCMA rules will be amended. They are in the process of amending the rules to cater for that. If the employer has indicated in that 14 days, because the compliance order says, Mr. Employer, you have not paid the minimum wage, we give you a compliance order to comply within 14 days. The CCMA will pick up that order in the system, developing the system jointly with the CCMA. The inspector don't have to go to the CCMA and lodge the order. The order will be given to the employer, at the same time the CCMA pick it up. Now the employer has got 14 days to comply. On the 15th day, if the employer has not complied, the CCMA issues an order. There's no hearing, because the employer has not complied, and the employer has not said we object. If the employer says we object to this order because we believe that this inspector did not apply its mind, it's wrong, then the CCMA set up a process. And in that process, then there's a hearing. The employer will come and put his case, and the inspector or anybody from the department, whoever, whatever you call them, will come and say to the commissioner, why did they issue this award? And then the commissioner will make a decision. And all the rules of the CCMA applies in that, in terms of when do you issue an award, when it must be done, all of those rules will apply.
Are you in agreement with that? Any other comments? Without provoking anyone, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Next amendment is in clause 12, on page 5 in line 51. To omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. The next one on page 8 in line on page 6 in line 1 to omit employees and to substitute persons. The same thing on page 6 in line 3 to omit an employee and to substitute a person. The next one is on page 6 after line 6 to insert the following. There's a proposal for new subsections 4 and 5.
Just to clarify, members, in case there are questions why you're putting a person in there. The BCA talks to employees. Now, the National Minimum Wage talks to employees workers, basically, workers. Yes. Now, to make sure that even people who are not employees are able to enforce, in terms of the DCA, their rights, and that's why we're putting testing in there. But we didn't want to amend the DCA and include a worker there. Then we must have, we will be changing the whole architect of the DCA. Now, when we say testing, it means that any person whose rights have not been affected, they can then enforce them in terms of the DCA. That's what we sent it to, that issue of any person.
A question for the department. In terms of drafting, you want to have legal clarity. And previously, if you will recall, when we did the amendment to Section 3, there we said employee or a worker as defined in the national minimum wage, specifically to cover the broader issue. So the legislative interpretation issue that may arise here is, why didn't we do the same here? And is person intended to be even broader than worker and employee? So the department can just clarify, can there ever be a situation where the person can be somebody other than an employee or a worker for purposes of national minimum wage? Because if not, then I think we must just be consistent with our language.
Can you please attend to that one, Honourable Mr. Lippitt?
Can see clause 3. Bongi.
I need to apply my mind to be sure to remember exactly why I think that the reason it's talking of persons is that in terms of the current provisions in terms of the national minimum wage, you've got employees have got the right to approach the CCMA, and trade unions have got the right to approach the CCMA. In our wisdom, we wanted to make sure that we're generalist enough in that section. It's a drafting issue that we talk about. The issue is that you want to make sure that it covers everybody. Whether whether they are employees or whether they are trade unions, and that's the issue that we're trying to deal with. If the word a worker makes sense and it does not change the concept of what we want to do, it's not an issue. But we want it to be as broad as possible in terms of that, because it's about access.
Can you reach an agreement amongst yourselves?
And also, remember, there's also the issue of limitation that is there on employees in terms of the threshold. And the threshold does not. Maybe we need to relook at it. I mean, it's not a big issue in terms of the amendment. It's a technical issue. What's the best way of capturing it instead of arguing here about this? Yeah. I mean, it's the best way that the parliamentary governors will be happy, the state law advisor will be happy, will also be happy. Maybe that we take it on those basis.
Can we agree on that one, member?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. As long as it don't take us back to the issue of a technical error that needs 3 months again to be sorted out. Ms. Nkalipe, please.
Okay.
No, thank you. Can you then proceed?
The next one, Chaperson, is on page 6, still under O clause 12, on page 6 of the line 6, to insert the following. There's proposed new insertions of subsection 4 and subsection 6, subsection 5, and they read as follows. The CCMA must appoint a commissioner in terms of section 135 of the Labour Relations Act to attempt to resolve by conciliation any dispute that is referred to the CCMA in terms of subsection 1. And subsection 5 reads, the CCMA must commence the arbitration of a dispute contemplated in subsection 1 immediately after certifying that the dispute remains unresolved in terms of section 1355. I'm not sure where this amendment is coming from, but Mr. Mkalbu will clarify that. Thank you.
Again, this is the proposal made by the CCMA. What is intended to? If you remember, the CCMA, in terms of the law, if there's a dispute, the CCMA must conciliate within 30 days. And then if the conciliation does not solve that dispute, then arbitration, the parties must apply for arbitration, and they've got 90 days to apply for arbitration. What this amendment says, it says, after conciliation, at the same time, same day that they said conciliation, if it's not resolved in conciliation, the CCMA can arbitrate. Therefore, it ensures that it's a con-up process immediately. Therefore, you're not going to have a situation where after conciliation, then parties go home, and then the other party must apply again, and then the CCMA will have 90 days to set up an arbitration. That's not the intention. The intention is here is that after 14 days, the employer has not complied, and the CCMA set up a process, try and convince the employer to comply. The employer refused, then the CCMA start an arbitration immediately. That's what it's intended to do, to ensure it's compulsory conciliation, arbitration on the same day. That's the intention.
Honorable America.
Thank you, Mr. Mkalipi. Does the same rules apply for the separation of the con-op process as it is currently the case, whereby a party could apply that the process to be separated?
In this case, there's no option. I mean, remember we're talking of here vulnerable workers who have not been paid their minimum wage, and we want to resolve the dispute immediately. There's no option that an employer can say, no, I don't want to arbitration to start now, I want arbitration to start 3 months down the line. That's denying justice and delaying assignment. And the intention, and in the LRA presently, there's compulsory arbitration, I think a con up for those people who are earning lesser than the threshold. The same applies here. The dealing with vulnerable workers, I must remember, who earn 20 rand an hour, for them to wait for 90 days for an arbitration to speak after 90 days to determine whether the employer is correct or not. It's an issue that we don't think that is fair, that is reasonable. And on those basis, the law here specifically says the CCMA, you don't have an opt-out condition.
Do we understand, members? We are in agreement. Remember, we agreed when the CCMA presented, we agreed that all those concerns they've raised and proposals they've made is valid proposals, so we're going to incorporate, we give the instruction that that proposal should be incorporated into the bill. So that is part of it, Mr. Mkalipine. Yeah, can we proceed then?
Thanks, Chair. Next amendment is in clause 5 of the A list, clause 13. On page 6, in lines 12, 17, and 19, to omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. Same thing in clauses 14 and 15, to substitute 2017 with 2018 chapter. The next amendment, Chairperson, is on clause 16 of the bill. Clause 16 of the bill deals with, it's a new insertion, deals with fines for not complying with the national minimum wage. So the first amendment there on page 6 in line 45 after 76A is to insert 1, meaning that the wording in 76A they will constitute subsection 1 because there's a new insertion, which is a new subsection 2, which is in item number 2 on page 6 after line 49 to insert the following. There's a new subsection 2 that is being inserted in section 76A. And it reads as follows, Chairperson. For second or further non-compliance, a fine that may be imposed on the employer is an amount that is greater of A, thrice the value of the underpayment, or B, thrice the employee's monthly wage. And subclause 3, the minister may issue guidelines on the determination and calculations of fines imposed under subsection 2. Subsection 4, the department must maintain and publish on its official website, comma, on a quarterly basis, comma, a list of all employers who were issued with compliance orders. And Chairperson, the basis for this amendment, if you recall from the last meeting, the question arose in terms of what is going to happen to repeated offenders, because currently section 76A is speaking of one occurrence. What happens if the employer paid less than the national minimum wage? So that is the penalty. And the committee requested us to consider and see if we cannot come up with a draft that is going to talk to the second or repeated offences.
Just to add, members, that we added there sub 3, where it says the minister may issue guidelines on determination and calculation of funds imposed under subsection 2. And the reason there is simple, and we want to be able to explain exactly what is a repeat offender. In terms of the guideline, because the issue that we raise is that what happens if I work for her company and we are 5 and we're all not paid the minimum wage in January, and then I come in January and claim a minimum wage, the 4 don't come, they come a year later, remember we've now moved the 12 months to 36 months, the other 4 come a year later, is that a report of a repeat offender? Is it the same offender? Which fine do you lay in that? Those are those technicalities, and we think that that could be dealt with guidelines that are given to commissioners and the inspectors by the minister, because the law is not going to be able to unpack all of those issues. That's the issue, that the reason we put in the tree there to issue the guidelines.
Do we agree with it? Members, Mr. Honorable
Mashile? Chair, I think sub 2 and sub 3, they are not talking to each other. Because sub 2 is talking to the calculation of the fine. But then 3 then should be talking to the guidelines, as Mkhalif is explaining, on the determination of the non-compliance. But now it talks to calculation, which is already covered under sub 2 or the job. Because we have got two options there, which one to use, whichever is the highest. The calculation is already sorted out, which means it's now sub 3 then must talk to the determination of non-compliance or whatever, not calculations of fine. What you have explained is not necessarily the calculation of fine. Is the veracity of the non-compliance or categorizations of this non-compliance to be able to tell whether this is the second or the third or is the fourth. But it's not necessarily talking to calculations, because calculations is already catered for
you only have these two options. That's what you are telling us. Now, three, then you must talk to the guidelines of determining whether a person is a repetitive whatever and all that, not to conclusion.
It's clear.
I take it, Chair, that the members get the essence of what we want to do.
Yeah.
Whether it captures that, we need to relook at that and make sure that it captures that, that what we're talking about, we need to be able to explain so that you don't have in one company people who have done the same thing because they claim at a certain time they are regarded as a first offender. And then in other companies, people have done the same thing because they claim at different times, and then the company is regarded as a repeat offender. That's the issue that we're dealing with. Maybe we need to relook at that to just make sure that we catch up that spirit.
Yes. We agree on that one, eh? Can we then move?
The next amendment is at clause 18 on page 7 of the bill, in lines 12, 16, 18, 21, and 28, to omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. The next one, Chairperson, is clause 20, clause rejected. For clause 20 is the one that deals with the transitional provision, and they were talking to the repeal, they were making reference to the repeal of Chapter 8 of the Principal Act, but that is no longer the case now, so hence it's being proposed to be rejected. And then instead we're proposing a new clause that is going to talk to the transitional provisions as a result of the dissolution of the Employment Conditions Commission. So that's a new clause. And it reads as follows, transitional provisions, clause 24. With effect from the date of the establishment of the National Minimum Wage Commission established by Section 8 of the National Minimum Wage Act 2018, A, the Employment Conditions Commission established by Section 59 of the Principal Act is hereby disestablished. B, the functions of the Employment Conditions Commission are hereby transferred to the National Minimum Wage Commission. And C, the members of the Employment Conditions Commission in office at the time of the establishment of the National Minimum Wage Commission are hereby transferred to the National Minimum Wage Commission for the remainder of their term of office. And the intention here, Chairperson, is to try to clarify the question that is going to arise, what's going to happen now after now that the Employment Conditions Commission has been dissolved. What's going to happen to the functions, who's going to perform those functions, and then what's going to happen to the existing members. So that's what this transitional provision is trying to do. Thanks, Chairperson.
Can I just explain a little bit also, members, that in terms of C, we can confirm that the term of operation of the current members of the commission expired in March already. It expired, I think, end of April. Therefore, C is going to be irrelevant because we don't have commissioners, ECC members, because their time has already expired. As the Honorable colleague was explaining, this intention was in case they are members and the work that they are still doing and their term was not expired at that time, that then they will be incorporated into that. But I immediately explained that their term of office
has expired. So, whilst the term of office expired, what's happening in between in terms of the functions of those, and taking into consideration that we don't know exactly when the commission will be established?
Well, what we're doing first, I mean, is asking the minister to extend that term for a limited period on a monthly basis to ensure that we keep up the standard effective. Secondly, remember the work of the commission presently can do only what the minister asked them to do. investigate. Investigation is triggered by the minister present. And thirdly, they review sectoral determinations. And there's no sectoral determination that needs to be reviewed between now and even the end of August. There's no sectoral determination because of that. But you correct me, but if this process goes on until next year or that year, then I think by the end of this year, there's, for example, domestic workers at the 1st of December that must be reviewed and all those issues. And we're crossing our fingers that members will be productive and deliver on time in terms of these issues. But C is intended to cover that eventuality. If that eventuality happens, then you'll be able, in terms of C, and also in terms of extending the terms of office of the members themselves. And we are looking very carefully on the process to ensure that there's no gap in between.
Do we then really need that clause C at this stage, legal, before you, Honorable Mushile?
If I'm understanding Kalibi correctly, you know, extending these commissioners on a monthly basis, I think it's not going to assist them even to do planning of their work. And the sure is that I think they should consider extending the work of these commissioners until a commission is established. The establishment of the new commission then must render the other one term terminated, so that then they are able to plan their work. But I mean, if you don't know whether next month you are still there, surely you can't plan anything. So the establishment of the new commission should signify the termination of the old one. So we, in other ways, that these current ones, if their term has expired, then the minister must extend it to a period, to the date when a new one is established.
Just to elaborate on that the term of office of the Employment Conditions Commission should be extended by the minister until the National Minimum Wage Commission is established. You may respond.
Minister, we agree with that, but you can't do that in terms of this legislation.
No, yes.
It's not going to help that.
No.
That process is a process that the minister has got to do in terms of the BCA and appoint them and set up the time for them. The principle, there's no issue there. But it, as I'm saying, that that doesn't affect this clause. Their period of operation doesn't affect this clause because that is set in terms of the current legislation.
Chair, we agree with Dr. Mkhalibi, but what we are trying to say now affects C. It affects C. C can stand as it is now. Because this one talks to those that will still be in force or in employment by the time the new commission is established. Now you say no, the terms of these commissioners has expired. Then now we say you will then operationally extend their term to the date on which the new commission is established. Then this C then must be drafted differently.
Oh, well, the issue is it needed, the C?
But that's what I'm asking, is it even needed? Can't we delete it? Legal?
Chair, the concerns that we have is that until such time as the National Minimum Wage Commission is set up, you have a lacuna because there is nobody dealing with these issues. So I think that was the intention of that C. But maybe we need to redraft it to just to indicate that it would only be until such time as the new commission is established, and that the new commission would then take over all of the duties. So not deal with it as a transfer to the National Minimum Wage Commission, but rather to say that maybe A is actually what needs to be changed, is to say that the commission is disestablished on the date that the new commission comes in. Maybe that will make more sense.
I think we agree on that.
Approach.
Can
Chairperson,
For clarity, Chair, we need to separate the two, the commission, which is the body, and the members. So hence, paragraph A is talking to the commission to say it is now disestablished. And now the question, what's going to happen to the remaining members? So I would favor the view of the honorable member, meaning that we should link their term of office. They must operate until the establishment of the commission, making a reference to the National Minimum Wage Act, meaning that they will remain in office until the establishment, and then on establishment of that commission, then their term of office will lapse. So I would prefer to separate, for clarity purposes, to separate the two issues.
I think we are in agreement. Honorable Mashile?
No, I think I'm in agreement with her, because you see, we are having two steps here. When this bill or this amendment is signed, then it kills the previous commission. But you don't have the new commission. You still now have a long run to make. So which means then you must use the older commissioners then to work now in the space of the new commission that's still going to be established. It can take 6 months or whatever, depending on the head hunting or whatever that's been done. So it's I would be saying that it's only C that needs to be relooked. And then just to correct the situation, just to tie up the two, the end of these current commissioners of the ECC, and then to the beginning of those after physically populating that commission.
You can just add, Chair, on the short title of the introduced bill, the commencement of the Basic Conditions Employment Amendment Act has been linked to the commencement of the National Minimum Wage Act, meaning that this bill won't commence in the absence of the others, because they talk to each other. So that's another thing that I want to bring to the attention.
Okay, good.
Next amendment, chairperson, is in clause 21 on page 8 in lines 23 and 24 to omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. And the last one, chairperson, is a long title. The amendment today is on page 2 in the third line to omit the first of this and to substitute the certain. It currently reads to repeal the provisions. Now it's going to read to repeal certain provisions of the amendment there. And the next one is on page 2 in third line. After end, to insert, to disestablish. In the bill, you will see it being reflected there. Dealing with social determination and to disestablish the employment conditions. Employment commission. The last one, chapter is on page 2 in the 7th line, to omit 2017 and to substitute 2018. Thanks, Chair.
I just want to double check if the new law of transitional provision, unless I'm not having the same code, it is written section 24. Mm-hmm. And then but now it looks like you are ending up with 21. Is there any good reason why it is not 22 or 23? I'm just trying to check what's happening.
So 21
you're
talking about, Chairperson, is 21, which is clause 21 of the bill as it is,
yeah,
as introduced. And then the 24, which is the transitional provision, is reflected in the bill. In the bill.
The issue is that there are no changes in clause 21, 22, 23.
Yeah.
Therefore, that's why it does not reflect on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do we agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
can we then agree that all the recommendations that have been proposed is reflecting on the sections that has just been presented to us in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, including the amendments that we propose to be factored into the final draft. Thank you. Then we move, honourable members, to the National Minimum Wage Bill. B31A.
Madam Chair, could I just ask a question? I didn't know it is now almost 12:32. Are we going to do justice and complete the recommendations and the report, seeing that we have many plenaries at 2? Just a question.
No, we're not going to deal with the report now. We're going to deal with the report during the clause by clause. Or which report are you referring to? The budget report. Remember, we've already adopted it. The amended version has been sent to us, available electronically, and it's also going to be circulated to us now in a hard copy. So it is factored in. I've looked through it, the amendments that we've proposed, but it's already been adopted.
So my question remains, Madam Chair, whether we will have enough time to complete the National Minimum Wage Bill today, given the fact that we have commitments at 2.
I assume, honourable members, that lunchtime is starting at 1. So when looking at the proposals on B31A, it's a minor proposal, it's a two-pager. It's not as heavy as the BCA. But can we have the views of the other members?
Sure.
Sorry? Can we move?
Okay.
We agree then. So we proceed then on the National Minimum Wage Bill. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start immediately. Clause 1. The first change on page 4 in line 15, we've omitted responsible for labour and substituted it with of labour. That's referring to the minister. So instead of saying the minister responsible for labour, we're saying the Minister of Labour, and it's just stylistic. In number 2, on page 4, from line 26, we've omitted the definition of organised community, and we substituted it with a new definition. This is just in order to make the definition shorter and to read better, but both definitions remain the same. It defines community as defined in the NEDLAC Act, so there's no substance change there. Number 3, on page 4 from line 37, to omit the definition of worker and to substitute the following definition. Worker means any person who works for another and who receives or is entitled to receive any payment for that work, whether in money or in kind. Now, members will recall that at the last meeting we had extensive discussion as to whether we needed to amend it slightly more to add the words on behalf, so who works for another or on behalf of another. And we were asked to go back to the drawing board and just see if that will assist or make things more complicated. We're in agreement with the department, it may cause more complications, and we think the Constitutional Court will, when it passes its judgment on the temporary employment services, the issue will then be clear. So for now, we're going to leave it as it is there. Then in clause 3, on page 4, after line 50, to insert the following subsection. This Act does not apply to a volunteer who is a person who performs work for another person and who does not receive or is not entitled to receive any remuneration for his or her services. The committee asked us to cover the issue of volunteers as this was raised during the public hearing, and we've done that. Clause 4, on page 5, in line 20, to omit 32 and 33 and to substitute it with 32, 33 and 34. 34 is the section that deals with deductions, and we were in agreement that deductions are applicable, and that's why we've just reflected that over there to add section 34. In clause 5, on page 5, in line 31, to omit A and to substitute subject to section 9, capital A, of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And then on page 5, in line 33, to omit if and to substitute subject to subsection 2. The reason for these changes were because the committee had decided that the rule that an employee or a worker must be paid 4 hours, a minimum of 4 hours a day, notwithstanding the actual amount worked, should also be extended and that protection be afforded to workers and not only employees as it was originally defined in the BCE. So that's the purpose of that. Clause 6 on page 5 in line 38, to omit 1 May of the next year and to substitute it with a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. When the first draft was done, the intention was that it would be passed by 1 May, but this was a necessary change. Number 2, on page 5 in line 39, after views, to insert including those of the public. And you will recall that members asked us to cater for a public participation process in the Commission's review of the National Minimum Wage. So that means they will invite for public comment and they must include those views in their report. On page 5, in line 45, to omit the word alter and to substitute it with reconsider. There was agreement that the Minister does not have the power to direct the Commission to alter its report. However, the Minister can ask the Commission to reconsider its report or to clarify the report. On the next page, on page 5, from line 46 to omit subsection 5. Chair, this was the issue on who has the power to determine the national minimum wage and whether it should be done by Parliament, or whether it should be done by the Minister or some sort of a hybrid solution. We had extensive consultation as we were requested to do, and the difficulty with keeping it as Parliament was, we did not deal with the practical effect of what would happen if Parliament didn't pass the national minimum wage. It was felt that it is an executive function and it should rest with the Minister, and the changes now reflect that. So on page 5 from line 48, we've omitted subsection 6 and we've substituted it with the following subsection. The Minister must, by a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette, determine the adjustment to the national minimum wage and by notice in the Gazette amend the national minimum wage contained in schedules 1 and 2. The other thing that we still need to do, Chair, is you will see in that section the date of 31 October still appears. And the problem that we had there is obviously we don't know when the Act is going to be promulgated in order for us to calculate that period. But we've now decided that we will redraft it perhaps to say that the President must proclaim that date as well, just because we obviously don't have a glass ball to tell us what the date is going to be, but we were hoping by this stage we would have had more clarity. But in the absence of that, the proposal is that we allow the President to determine that date, and it will then become the annual date by which the Commission must do its report.
Thank you.
Page 5. On the calculation of wage, subsection 3. I want to check, because I see that sentence is safe, subject to subsection 2, if the worker is paid on a basis other than the number of hours worked, the worker may not be paid less than day. That minimum wage, is it a national measure or something else? Huh?
I mean, this is, there's an omission there, there's a miss. Remember, this is what the 4 hours that we're talking about, the guaranteed 4 hours that we're talking about. In the printing of this, they've missed that. Therefore, the worker should not be paid less than 4 hours of the minimum wage. 4 hours, that's
four
it.
4 hours of the minimum wage, yeah. 4 hours of the minimum wage.
4 hours, it's 4 hours, it's a guaranteed 4 hours. We need to re-look at that, it's not covering properly.
That's an omission, the 4 hours.
Sorry. Yeah. No, the issue here, I mean, just looking at it, the issue is for people who work on commission. If you work on commission, you should not be paid less than the minimum wage. Now, that's what 2 is trying to do. Therefore, let us say you work on commission.
No,
It's a national minimum wage.
There's an omission.
Yeah. You should not be paid less than the 20 rand an hour. That's the essence of what he's trying to do.
Minimum, as you said, the national minimum,
wage. Yeah.
The remuneration. We are speaking about wages. Here we're saying remuneration. Maybe it's the same way, I don't know, but it's fine.
Which one?
English. That application of Act. On subsection 2. This Act does not apply to a volunteer who is a person who performs work for another person and who does not receive or is entitled to receive any remuneration. But I was thinking it's any wage or wage. Because the remuneration part, according to me, speaks to something else where you can debit or whatever. So I don't know. Can just,
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the word, the context of this new proposal, Chair, is for volunteers, Chair, not necessarily workers or employees, even capital or anything like that. Therefore, the word remuneration, I think, is proper in this context because we're talking now about volunteers, not necessarily employees who are going to get wages or workers who are going to get a national minimum wage. So the remuneration phrase, I think, is proper under this specific context.
Are we covered in terms of the previous section that we've dealt with? Can we move on? Thank you.
Okay, sorry, I don't know what's happening with this. I'll try and speak loudly, Chief. Oh, it's for the recording. Okay. All right, Chief. On page 5, from line 53, to omit subsection 7 and substitute the following subsection. The Minister must, within 7 days of the publication of the amended schedules in the Gazette, table the schedules 1 and 2 in the National Assembly. Chair, this, we have a concern that this step may not be necessary after the decision is taken to allow the Minister to determine the national minimum wage, because it would serve no purpose coming to Parliament, because at that stage it's already been decided. So I don't know if if members would prefer that we take it out, because the NMW would have already been gazetted at that point. So the tabling in the National Assembly would be of no practical consequence.
Honorable Mashile.
Chairperson, I think it needs to stay in there. Because the intention of tabling, even though that we have written National Assembly, one would have preferred that it gets tabled in Parliament, not necessarily National Assembly alone. Because what happens is that when it is tabled here, then it gets referred to Labour. Then the committee then becomes aware of the thing, and then if we need to engage the minister, then we are able to engage on this particular document that has been tabled. If it doesn't come here, then the committee will never be aware of any publication, and we may not even be able to speak to the minister. So I think it needs to stay here to facilitate the dialogue between the department and the committee.
Yeah, I think we clarified it as the committee. It's not for the committee to say or to make any input on it. It's already been gazetted. It's just to take notice and maybe engage the department and the minister on that.
Okay, noted. Chair, should we then change National Assembly to say Parliament?
Yes.
Okay. So, clause 9. On page 6, in line 25, to omit an independent, and this is in relation to the chairperson, and to substitute it with a chairperson. There was discussion as what is meant by an independent chairperson, and we've looked at other legislation, it would merely say a chairperson. Number 2, on page 6, in line 29, after experts, to insert who are knowledgeable about the labour market and conditions of employment. So we've just added some minimum criteria for the appointment of experts, because it wasn't clear what type of experts would be required. On clause 10, 1, on page 6, in line 33, after minister, to insert after consultation with NEDLAC. Originally, NEDLAC consultation wasn't required for all the persons that would be appointed on the commission. And what was decided in the last meeting was that the minister would have to consult with NEDLAC in terms of all of the appointments. Number 2, on page 6, from line 34, to omit after consultation with NEDLAC. That's now covered above. On page 6, after line 52, to insert the following subsections. And this is completely brand new. The chairperson and members of the commission must act impartially when performing any function of the commission, may not engage in any activity that may undermine the integrity of the commission, and must recuse themselves from advising the minister on any matter in respect of which they have a direct or indirect financial interest or any other conflict of interest. The commission must appoint a member to act as chairperson whenever the chairperson is absent from the Republic or from duty, or for any reason is temporarily unable to function as chairperson. So this was also, Chair, following our last meeting, we were asked to put in some requirements as to conduct of the commissioners, and also what to do if there's a temporary vacancy, which we've now done. Clause 11, on page 7, in line 6, after differentials, to insert and make such information available to the public. This also stems from the last meeting where we were asked to ensure that there's proper transparency in the process, and that provides for that. Number 2, on page 7, in line 12, to omit the full stop and to substitute a semicolon. That's just a technical drafting matter. Number 3, on page 7, after line 12, to insert the following paragraph. And this stems from the fact that we've now retained sectoral determinations, that the Commission will also advise the Minister on sectoral determinations and advise the Minister on any matters concerning basic conditions of employment. And then, Chair, I just have one more addition that I would like to put in as an H, to say, to also advise the Minister on anything else that may be required of the Commission in terms of any other law, because that will cover us for the transfer of the functions from the old Employment Commission to the new national minimum wage. So if by any chance we haven't listed all of them, it's a catch-all just to cover us. So with your permission, with the permission of the committee, if we could please add that. So by way of example, Chair, Section 52 empowers the Commission to investigate on sectoral determinations, but that's not listed specifically in the National Minimum Wage Bill because the two are meant to be there together. So it's just merely to tie the two pieces of legislation together.
Can we listen to the department?
We
do you agree?
We're comfortable with it.
We agree, members, on that new insertion. Then we move.
Chair, on clause 13, on page 7, in line 20, after the word secretariat, we've inserted and the necessary resources. There were concerns that a secretariat in itself is not sufficient and a secretariat needs to be properly resourced in order to do its work. So that was the addition that we've added there. Clause 14, on page 7, from line 26, to omit appropriated by Parliament and which are subject to audit by the Auditor General in terms of Section 188 of the Constitution and to substitute defrayed from the budget vote of the Department. The committee will recall that we had quite a long discussion as to how the Commission will be positioned and the Secretariat, and we agreed that it would be within the Department and that the budget would come from the Department's budget rather than them being seen as an independent public entity for purposes of the PFMA. Clause 15 deals with exemptions. On page 7 in line 33, to omit its members, plural, and to substitute it in the singular with a member. There seemed to be confusion during the public participation process on whether exemption applications could be made, could take the form of mass applications when somebody was applying on behalf of its members. So this very small change is to indicate that each one will be dealt with on an individual basis and there won't be mass applications. Clause 16 on page 7 in line 45 to omit may and to substitute must. This has to do with the way in which you do application for exemption. Your application must be in the prescribed form, not maybe in the prescribed form, because that indicates that there's a possibility it can be in another form. On page 8, from line 7, to omit paragraph B and to substitute the following paragraph, the publication of data on exemptions. So there will now be regulations on what the format of the list of exempted employers will take. Members will recall we had discussions that this information should be made publicly available, but now the regulations will speak to how that is going to actually happen, whether it's going to be on the website or some sort of a register, whatever the case may be. On page 8, after line 9, to insert the following subsection, the Minister may make regulations which the Minister considers necessary or expedient to be prescribed in order to achieve the primary objects of this Act. So that's to cover any other regulations that we may have not listed specifically that may be required. On page 8, in line 11, to omit 30 and to substitute 21. Chair, this was the comment period for draft regulations. We did reduce it from 30 to 21. It was not a matter that was raised in the last committee meeting. The rationale for that was there was a concern that the main regulations are those that are going to deal with exemptions. So it's that initial set of regulations that need to be passed fairly soon after the bill is promulgated. The longer you take to pass those regulations, the longer it will take for employers to be able to make application for exemption. We thought 21 days was a reasonable period to allow for submissions, but the committee must please provide direction on whether it would want us to rather keep it at 30 days instead of the 21.
There's a proposal, member. Honorable Kurai moves for the 21 days instead of 30. Do we have any other views? Honorable America? It's agreed upon, honorable members. So we then omit.
Next one, number 5, on page 8, after line 15, to insert the following subsection, the minister must table the regulations in Parliament, and that was also for information purposes, and it ties in with what Honourable Mashile is saying, that we should say Parliament and not National Assembly. Clause 17, on page 8, in line 20, to omit 1 May 2018 and to substitute it with a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. Schedule 1, similarly in paragraphs A, B and C of item 2, to omit 1 May 2018 and to substitute it with a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. In the long title, Chair, this was just an error that had crept in the initial draft where it spoke to transitional provisions in respect of farm workers and domestic workers. And there wasn't actually a section dealing with transitional provisions, and we've agreed that the sectoral determinations remain, and that Schedule 1 and 2 will also have to be adjusted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Parliamentary Legal Advisor. We're standing on Act 12:59 now. So we have 1 minute, members. Very good in terms of time management this time. Do we agree, honourable members, that everything that we've asked the redrafters to consider has been considered and reflected accordingly in the A-list? Honourable Mashile?
Chairperson, I think in the main it has been done, and then we have a part, and I think it is bold enough. And then I think the only one comment that one needs to make is that we hope that when they've completed the A-list and go into the redraft, they must also make adjustments to the memorandum, correct, to reflect the current content. Because some of the edits that we've made, almost in all the amendment bills, will actually affect even the memorandum to a certain extent, then they must assist us in making those consequential corrections.
The Honorable America, are you satisfied with
Madam Chair, I reserve my right.
The deductions change.
No, better to make amendment to the DCA.
Yes, so 34, that's exactly what we wanted to raise, Chair. It's necessary to just read it into the record because each bill is dealt with separately, that the revised A-list will now need to reflect that deductions may not be more than a quarter of the salary. So we will put that in the section dealing with the calculation of the minimum wage. But we'll have to draft the particular wording for that, Chair.
So it's agreed upon. Is there anything else that you've omitted? No errors. And it's on the record, Mr. Mkalisi. No, I think with taking that into consideration, we agree that everything that we felt should be included in the redrafting has been included, and we accept that our views are properly expressed in the redrafted bills, and the final bills will reflect our deliberations as we've just concluded on it. So, legal?
Sorry, Chair, I don't want to hold the process back, but there's just one more addition that I had that I'm only looking at my notes now. On 4, that deals with the national minimum wage. Subsection 4 says the payment of a national minimum wage cannot be waived, and the national minimum wage takes precedence over any contrary provision in any contract, collective agreement, or law, except a law amending this act. I just wanted to add the Chair sectoral determination so that we completely covered. So it means the sectoral determination can't conflict with the national minimum wage.
I think it's agreed upon.
So we agree that that wording should also be inserted. So taking that into consideration, I think we are done and we have accepted, we are agreeing as the committee members that that's the way forward. Or that that's our views are being considered in the amendments as we've just received it via the ABLES. Honourable members, when we speak about the next agenda item, it's talking about the way forward in terms of this bill. So can we then agree to indicate that we've finalized our deliberations and amendments and the redrafting, and the final amendments can be made by the redrafters for tabling in the committee next week. Our next committee day is the 16th, as we've agreed. So can we agree then that that's going to be our way forward, that we'll deal with the final bills in terms of the clause by clause on the 16th? Can we have an indication, Honourable Martin?
Agree.
On record, please.
We agree with the way forward, as you just enunciated, Chairperson.
Okay, can we have a seconder there, Honourable America?
No, this is not a seconder, Madam Chair, is that we need to take these bills to our caucuses, and we will not have sufficient time to canvass the views of our caucus if we deal with this bill, these bills next week. So I would suggest that we, in 2 weeks' time, we finalize the bills and we have an opportunity to canvass our caucuses on these bills next week, and, because tomorrow is too late for us to do that.
Honourable Martins, you were first, then Honourable Machine. Chair, I don't know if I misunderstood you, but what I understood you to have said was that the legal advisors will go and clean up what we discussed, and next week we'll table that to the portfolio committee. Mm-hmm. Not that next week we'll decide finally, but the cleaned up versions of all the bills will be available to members to discuss and then take to the political parties.
Honourable Mashile.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think, I mean, from today until next week, meeting, we've got 2-7 days. And these documents I've been speaking about here, they are sitting in people's computers, and the changes have already been made and captured, and then surely by the end of tomorrow, we may be having the edited ADs, and people may be, even the redrafted bills, I mean, we have them today, just minor adjustments. Surely by Friday, we may be having all these documents in our computer. And we should be able to make all those sorts of consultations and speak to these bills next week, Wednesday. And if we don't finish, then we don't finish. But to stretch it into our 14 days, when we are getting right in the middle of the the budget vote, we will be looking for trouble.
Honourable members, we have to take cognizance of the fact that we explicitly brought it to the attention of the committee members that the redrafted bills will be sent to you, and we request the honourable members to engage with the caucuses, or engage with as individual parties with the redrafted bill before we come to this gathering, just to make sure that all our views is indeed captured. So we've had our deliberations, we've had our to me it's somewhat disturbing if we say that we don't have enough time to look at the amendments, because we've already received it last week, and we're going to have 7 days, full 7 days, now, from now until next week. So it's really disturbing to note that some of us didn't take the opportunity to discuss it with our parties, taking into consideration also it's been a really long process, and some of us use the opportunities to our advantage to engage with the bills, the draft bills and amendments and proposals, and we did it in consultation with our parties. That's why we came here, to make the amendments, because we specifically raised previously that we have to go back to our parties to get mandates on the proposals, on the draft. And now we are saying that we didn't speak to our parties. It's a bit strange to me. So really, I would really urge the honourable members. We'll receive the final draft before the end of the week, and let us go back and just re-emphasize with our parties that what they mandated us to do, we've done it, and where are the areas of concern where we couldn't agree as the parties, but we've agreed that it will be in the final bill based on majority views of the parties in this committee, as represented in this committee. So based on that, I'll pave the way forward that in terms of this bill, on Wednesday the 16th, we'll get the redrafted, we go clause by clause in terms of all the redrafted bills. Can we agree on that as the way forward? Honourable Mashile, you've already
agreed.
Okay. Honourable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it's just not. I'll just move a little closer. It is not that we have not consulted our members, our caucus. The question is that we don't represent our jackets here. We represent a party who has particular orientation towards the legislative making process. And within our party, you're going to expect us when we return next week that we need to agree to each and every clause within the bill. Now, we have broadly spoken about these bills in our previous caucus prior to any of these amendments came about, and I don't buy the fact that you making the assertion that it's disturbing that we have not spoken to our people and get mandates. When we come here, we cannot agree with each clause after we have canvassed with our caucus. And if you so decide to proceed, then certainly you can proceed, you know. But I want to put it on record that we are a party that's accountable to our caucus. We are put here by our party, and we need to take these matters back to our party. It's simply just not sending out a memo or copy of the bills to each and every member. So I just want to put it on record is that we can proceed and we will be here, but we call upon you to consider the fact that we need to take these bills, you know, once it's completed, to our party before we come here and agree to it close by close, so that we could have the inputs of our party, because we don't represent our jacket. Thank you.
When we discuss these bills, yes, we have got mandate from our political party and engage in the discussion of the bills. But at the end of the day, it is the committee that approves the bill. It's not a party. The bills will be approved by the committee collectively as we do. And therefore now, as a committee, when we are saying that every one of us go back now, it's not a new thing. It's not a new report that we are meeting today.
Mm-hmm.
It is a product of our own labor over a period of time, which we are supposed to have been consulting with our masters. And therefore now, all what we can request is that those that are assisting us with the drafting to really work a little bit harder and ensure that maybe by tomorrow, this time, then they've got some sort of completed documents and then send it to us. And it is up to us as members, you know, when we receive those documents, if we feel that the our caucuses must have a look at them, then we do that and indicate to them that we are going to discuss this next week, next week Wednesday. And then the political parties will do the best out of it. But I mean, it can't be from our side as a committee and then delay ourselves when we have labored on these things like that. And one will just plead with the Honorable that we should put our efforts together in order to get these things out of the way. I know that, of course, the General, right from the beginning, the DA had the tendency of trying to slow us down. I mean, they've said that right at the beginning, before the reason. But it is important that they realize that when we slow this down, then we've got a lot of impact on ordinary workers that are out there that await the finalization of this. And all of us must be able to assist our workers.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. On that note, Honorable Members, I think we agree that on Wednesday the 16th, we will proceed with a close by close on all the board, taking into consideration that we will receive the amended version as soon as possible, and we request members to indeed go through the amended versions and indicate to the drafters if there's any areas that you feel haven't been captured correctly before we come to the meeting on Wednesday. That's that on the both members. We've received the amended version of the budget report. And just to get to the last page, on the recommendations, those are the four amendments that we propose, number 4, 5, and 6, including other amendments that we propose that the all the programs would be numbered, including the recommendations that have been done. Are we then satisfied with the final product?
Mm-hmm.
agreed to, we've already accepted the report, so we are fine with the final product. Just to indicate to members, to remind you that on the 15th, Tuesday the 15th at 10 o'clock in the National Assembly, we will have our budget vote debate, and good luck to all the parties that's going to partake in the debate. So with that taken into consideration, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.